you know, these revelations of the elite at a very high level, and we actually know the basic number of them as well, are doing human trafficking, human rape, and human sacrificing of children because they're the closest to God. And when I like read this, I mean, it's unthinkable. Like, you don't want to believe it. And so I mentioned it on Joe Rogan, but I also mentioned that I was starting an AI company. And what shocked me is after the show, more people wanted to talk about the AI thing, and more people were upset about, you know, that I was starting an AI company than they were about, you know, this nightmare of elites eating babies.
It's the first time since 2012. First time since 2012 that there are no British actors nominated for Best Actor or Best Actress. Yeah, British spokesperson said, yeah, well, at least we arrest our pedophiles. So, we got that one.
And so then I started thinking about why is this happening? Like, and I mean, we've seen people who have spoken about it, who have, you know, been who have participated in it and who have left, you know, it's an initiation that you go through to become, it's a confidence initiation that you go through to become part of a team. And that's when I realized that this is not something that's unique to the elites, that human nature involves these kinds of hazing initiations, or else we wouldn't see it happening since childhood.
Andrew Breitbart, I'm quoting you, in a newspaper interview he gave last year discussing the people who run Hollywood, quote,
uh-oh,
yes, quote, I'm telling you, they're uninteresting, they're vicious, they're vitriolic, they're really, really not good people, and I'm willing to say that on the record, close quote. Is there any of that that you regret?
No.
What makes them really, really not good people?
Well, I'm not saying the entirety, but the ones who have controlled Hollywood for the last 40 years, that quote could be attributed to the campus left as well. It could be attributed to people who are in charge in Venezuela right now. Anywhere where the left gets control, you start to see political correctness run amok. You start seeing dissenting views quashed. They use projection right before they do so. They start attacking the people that they're about to go after of being guilty of the very things that they do.
Lesser magic, which the Satanists do, they'll tell you, they show the thing in play before they do. They believe it makes it happen, and it gives it more power once they do it. And then you have the Podesta plan that if Trump won, they would actually do this and have the military turn against Trump, but now they've tried it. It's not an endorsement of Trump. He's doing some things I don't like right now. The point is they are literally pre-programming this and admitting it.
Yeah, and they're willing it into happening, and they're showing everyone an example of what it would be. So that, again, the revelation of the method, you see what's there, and it makes it okay for it to happen. And it's a form of, also of predictive programming.
And you started it on Joe, but then I do it too. He cut you off on another subject. Elaborate, because I've studied the Graham Grimoires, black magic, all that stuff to understand these people. They talk about, you have to show them, you have to tell them, that's a metaphysical rule. It also gets them ready. And then it makes it even more powerful when you actually do it. And then you realize that they're doing this. Speak to that if you can.
Well, we live in a universe of mind. And the one thing I've started to realize is that these kind of forms of spells, this magic is real. When you believe something enough, you create a reality.
Yeah, we call it a spell. What it is a narrative to control your mind, and we can build incredible things. So it's a program.
It is a program. You select it, you project it, you expect it, and then you collect it. It's the spec method, and it actually works. And so people who are using it for, you know, there's good spells and bad spells, and there's spells that are promoting humanity, and then there's spells that are disintegrating humanity.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
You're listening to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the number one most powerful morning broadcast in the world. I am your host, Rex Jones, joined by Tim Tompkins, of course, sitting here in studio today, running up the news for you guys, going through it with a fine-tooth comb and from a 30,000-foot view, but also at the ground level. Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, today's another day.
Today is another day.
We get to do this again. Always a pleasure to be able to have fun on this show.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it just a blast to be able to come in here and get prepped and work with the crew? And then we get to sit in here and basically we get to do our show on the network. And
yes,
it's phenomenal. And I love doing it. I know you do too. I thought yesterday went really well as well.
Yesterday was actually a really good day. I think Simon, we had Simon Dixon on yesterday. Yes. And he just had a lot to unpack about these hidden systems and the financial industrial complex.
We kept asking him questions and we were kind of looking to get to some like breaking news type of stuff, but he wants to give you like deep level overview on every point. And we really hope, we know our viewers and listeners are like really highly intelligent people that like those kinds of conversations. We appreciate you being here today. We hope to get you more breaking news updates.
Yeah, so
that's what Suleiman does.
That is exactly what Suleiman does. So we have Suleiman on at the top of the third hour at 10 o'clock. He's going to be coming on. He's one of those guys that actually watches breaking news as it happens. He's in spaces for like what? Like
he's
12 hours
okay.
a day?
So this is a guy that's live like 6 out of 7 of the days of the week. He's live for like 12 to 14 hours. He's on these calls. And what they do in these calls, it's a room. It's a Twitter space. We kind of all know what they are right at this point. But it's just people sharing the latest breaking news based on local events, people that live in these areas, people that know military officials, just constantly calling in breaking news, calling in update, explosion, chaos, war. And he's the guy really since the 12-day war that's been tracking all of it.
Yes, he has been tracking it.
So it's not just a, it's not just a thing he started to do now. So there's a lot of context he'll be able to give us as well for what's going on. And what I really want to know, and I know you probably want to know this as well, Tim, is what the hell do the civilian population think of what's going on right now? You look at these areas and you're like, when is a revolt going to ensue?
Now, which region are you talking about? The Iranians?
The Gulf states.
The Gulf states?
The Gulf states specifically.
Okay, so they were talking about this yesterday in a spaces that I was in, and the, and these two guys were debating. Actually, someone was debating with Simon.
Right.
And somebody was trying to say that, you know, the Gulf states would just start revolting against their leadership. But no, they're honestly mostly happy because they have a good standard of living and they have all the things they need. The only scenario I could see where they would revolt is if you have a scenario where, you know, the desalinization plants are taken out.
Well, I mean, that's not like a far off scenario. That's very realistic. I mean, that's what's happening right now. They're hitting civilian infrastructure already on both sides. And you talk about the people being comfortable. They're comfortable until the power goes off, right? So like it's a very fragile situation.
Yeah. I mean, now that does open up the door for that to happen on the other end because Iran also has the same issues where they don't just have endless resources of water. They also have salinization.
Sure, but their desalinization only accounts for 3% of their total water pool, whereas some of these nations, it's a majority. I mean, if you look at Israel, for example, and this is just why, like me and Tim, we're anti-war. We look at it just from a perspective of like, why would you do this? We're not like, we're taking America and Israel's side. We're also not like, we're taking the Iranian
inside. That's not our position. We look at this as like, oh, well, the Mercedes hit the 18-wheeler on the highway, and there's a giant eight-car fire now.
Yeah.
And then there's body parts everywhere in the street. Why the hell would you do this? Is that not your calculation as well?
Yeah, and here's the thing. I see criticism. I get criticism every single day, depending on how you look at it, what your opinions, what
we are the worst are. People ever. Go ahead. Sorry, I'm horrible. No. I'm a little impish today.
No, but it is true. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. But at the end of the day, we are trying to also find our way through the information just like everybody else.
And there's we can make mistakes.
Yeah, we can make mistakes. But there's breaking news like every single day. There's something new happening on the cycle. So
you want to get to that? Let's get to Dear Leader's latest tweet. And here's the thing. We always put together a great presentation when we come in here. But at the same time, when we come in here, a new Trump tweet immediately drops. Yeah. It's like a feature of the show. I'll go ahead and read it now.
This was at 7:44 a.m.
Yup. April Fool's Day. Maybe it's a joke. Iran's new regime president, much less radicalized and far more intelligent than his predecessors, has just asked the United States of America for a ceasefire. We will consider when Hormuz Strait is open, free, and clear. Until then, we are blasting Iran into oblivion. Or as they say, back to the Stone Age. President DJT. So, I don't believe it's a new guy other than Prochevskin. And Prochevskin's been very clear throughout this entire thing. Prochevskin was a moderate, and he was elected because there is that large portion of the Iranian people that do want to work with the West and want to be more liberal and secular and these things, right? But as we did a deep dive on, maybe we need to do it again. Tim, you explained very clearly how their leadership structure works. Maybe you could break that down.
Yeah, so
the Iran, supreme leader and all that.
Yeah, the Iran system is a little bit different. Ever since they overthrew the Shah, they used to have a different they used to have a monarchy system back in the 50s when the Shah was in place. And then you had the 70s hit, and then Ayatollah came in. They made it more of a religious structure. So with the supreme leader is almost like a walking authority on earth. And
there's Allah to them. There's Muhammad to them. And then there's that guy.
Yeah. Supreme leader is like right up to
the Shia
at the top,
Muslim. Yeah.
Right. And so then he also delegates and dictates some of the other people that are underneath him as well. But again, he is the top of the spear.
And he runs the IRGC, and a panel of clerics are the people that he's supposed to be held accountable to. The government is kind of like, it's a lesser organization than the actual military. The supreme leader makes national security decisions.
IRGC has a lot of control over the country and the direction. And the president is kind of like almost like a puppet head in certain aspects. He focuses more on domestic
I would just say like it's more like a Secretary of State perhaps, you know, or not even Secretary of State, like Secretary of the Interior, you know, kind of a guy that handles domestic cabinet like positions. But let's get to this because it's everything we're talking about and more from CBS News. Trump to give important update on Iran at 9 p.m. tonight. Okay, now we've also seen Keir Starmer come out. We've also seen the Australian Prime Minister come out, and they're all talking about the Strait. They're talking about the oil crisis. I think this is going to be a preamble for the ground invasion. What do you think?
You know, this could be either a fiery speech where there's something that comes out of it, or it could be a nothing burger.
I think we're out of nothing burgers.
Are we?
Dude, all right, so like me and Tim, like we're working at the nothing burger shack. Like I'm flipping the burgers, you put them in the bag, giving them to the guy at the window. Like we got a whole system going, and then we're out of nothing burgers. And then we have an actual, like, the big enchilada is coming and we're not prepared to cook it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what this is, because how many Trump speeches have we watched? We're like, this is going to be the thing. He exposes the globalists in a prison. And he's just like, my runways are the best. Big, beautiful runways like he did at the RNC right before he got elected. I think we're out of those now. I think it's going to be crashing out for real.
Yeah. I think he's at the point where he's feeling the pressure. He has to be feeling the pressure.
No question.
The rest of the world is feeling the pressure. And people at home with gas being at $4 a gallon are feeling that pressure. So, yes, you're
right. Yeah, and then Hegseth says that the upcoming days will be decisive. Well, like, what does that mean?
I think it means more bombs.
Yes.
Didn't they just use a bunker buster bomb yesterday?
I'm sure. I think we only have 33 of those in our inventory.
Mm.
So it's just a complete disaster. To add on to the complete disaster, U.S. deploys third carrier strike group to the Middle East, and this is going on in California right now. I'll go to NBC article. Another carrier strike group has deployed out of San Diego, the U.S. military or U.S. Navy confirmed, 1 month into the war on Iran. See, it wasn't a war. Remember when it wasn't a war? Remember
strategic
when it was
military operation,
hours?
Rex.
But seriously, like, do you remember when it was 24 to 48 hours?
Yeah, I mean, we said
when they were saying that.
Well,
and
we said the Ukraine Russia war was going to end within 24 to 48 hours.
That's an excellent point. The USS Theodore Roosevelt departed Sunday to conduct. Oh, that's nice. Routine operations. Okay. Leading naval force. We're going to war. We're already in a war, but it's expanding now. Naval forces into the Indo-Pacific. A spokesperson for the U.S. Third Fleet said, adding that the flagship of the carrier group has more than 5,000 sailors and Marines who are highly trained, tested, and certified in all warfare areas. In the interest of operational security, we do not discuss future operation schedules or specific personnel numbers. The spokesperson said before noting a carrier group's mission can be changed at any time. So they're going to combat. And like the thing is, you can play cute with the language. You can do little rhetorical games. Everyone knows what's going on.
Yes.
And because we've been doing the daily coverage, we've known what's been going on for weeks at this point. And like, that's why we have to talk about these same things over and over again. Like, this is a civil service to people, letting them know, hey, wake up. Wake up. Wake up and smell the roses. We're going to war, okay? Your sons and daughters are going to die. You're going to spend more and more money. You're going to be broke domestically. That's the deal, right? That's MIGA, M-I-G-A, make Israel or Iran, doesn't matter which, great again. The president literally said it himself.
He did. And it's so weird to watch this all play out because we've had conflicts and wars over specific time periods, but nothing like this.
Sure.
Because this is now the inflection point of a new world order.
Yes.
Because this is the transition.
Yes.
Everyone's seeing that the American dollar is trying to get its last strike and
clawing the money
for survival, right?
Yeah.
Because of everything that happened since COVID. I was just doing a thought experiment, not to take away from
this point. Go ahead.
But if COVID never happened, imagine what would have changed. Because COVID was almost an inflection point in itself where it changed the psychology of the entire globe and specifically America.
You learn to accept these crises, right?
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, look, you're locked down. You have time to think. A lot of transition happened. And I'm just thinking about like Biden messed up the whole economy. They pumped $6 trillion. And so it created this ripple effect of just change after change after change. And it's just accelerating. Like, yeah. we haven't taken our foot off the gas in like 6 years, folks. Just think about that.
Yeah.
Every single year, something new has come out, something crazy, even more crazier than the previous.
That's so true. I would say even longer than that. For a decade straight, we failed to take our foot off the gas. I mean, you look at the initial years of the first Trump administration, like that golden era period, which was really real between like 2016 to like late 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's because we weren't involved in putting our foot on the accelerator. But now that we've done that, there are no brakes anymore. We're going to go off the cliff.
Well, what do you think is the break? Like, how do we, is it, we lose the Republicans and we lose the midterms and Democrats come in and they start filibustering everything and.
We got a primary, the bad ones. We got to get really good people in there. I don't care if they're Republican, independent. It doesn't matter at this point. Here's the thing. This is why, like, I know, like, we cover a lot of different topics and you cover analytical systems, like to do the deep research. For me, I am passionately anti-war and I believe every American or most Americans, like 75%+, if they are properly explained or if it's properly explained to them what's been going on, what's been taken from them, we've all been robbed. Okay, so it's easy to go up to somebody and say, hey, here are the facts. Someone came in your house and took all of your precious goods.
Well, and now we're seeing all of the dissatisfaction play out in the polls, do we not?
Yes, absolutely. And that's an excellent transition. Can we go to, let's see where it is on the
sheet. It's clip number 11, I think.
Clip number 11, Donald Trump's net approval rating. I believe that is.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and roll that because I'm curious.
Absolutely.
Cost. Take a look here. Take a look at Donald Trump's overall net approval rating. This is the lowest of his term, the lowest of his second term. We're talking about minus 17 points, 17 points underwater. And unlike in Donald Trump's first term, in which he was negative basically throughout his entire term, Trump actually started off in positive territory here in his second term. But now he's at the lowest point of his second term. But there's an even bigger comparison to be made, okay? So obviously Trump was elected once back in 2016, then he took a four-year break, and then, of course, he's serving his second term and it's his second presidency. So I went back and I looked at all of the presidents at this point in a presidency, all of them, all of them at this point in their presidency. And guess what? Donald Trump is the lowest ever. The lowest ever at this point in a presidency, lower than Joe Biden, lower than Jimmy Carter, lower than Ronald Reagan. He's lower than all of them. All of them at this point in a presidency. You know, you can make any sort of swimming comparison you want. Maybe you want to make a comparison with a diver like Greg Louganis. Maybe you want to make a swimming comparison, Michael Phelps. Maybe if you're me, like an old Jewish soul, you want to make a comparison with Mark Spitz. Either way, he is very much.
You heard it. All of them. All of them, Rex.
Right. And here's the thing. I'm going to turn myself down the headphones here. I keep forgetting to do that. Here's the thing that's so wild about this. The argument to people watching us right now that are getting angry, they're going, they're using CNN, and CNN is fake news. Donald Trump told me that. Okay, well, Donald Trump also told you that when they gave him 100% approval rating and said that everyone liked him and that nobody else, he got better ratings than Kim Jong-un, basically, we have to accept that. So this, therefore, must also be true.
Well, even if you, this might be from CNN, I think that's what you're saying.
Sure.
Even if you look at Fox, right?
Yeah.
Fox is reporting, I think, above 60% disapproval ratings. And I've seen plenty of videos, screenshots of that.
Sure.
Maybe if we can find something like that. It's across the board, and it's not hard to find the facts, you know? And you can live in a box or put your head in the sand and pretend like it's not happening, but it doesn't matter whether it was a Democrat or whether it was a Republican. No one wants to be in these situations or lied to, and that's what's driving these poll numbers.
Sure. The argument that I'm making by pointing out the CNN hypocrisy is what we see on Fox News a lot with the polling and with the propaganda, really, is the reinforcement of the base still supports President Trump. The base, the base, the base. You hear this over and over and over again. They're not worried about the independent. They're not even worried about the Democrats. And I think it's funny that we hear them talk about the midterms so much. They don't care about the midterms at all. They know they're going to lose everything because of their foreign policy. They made a calculated decision to spend their political capital now, in my opinion.
Well, here's the thing, Rex. When I was kind of more on the left side back in the early 2020s.
Right.
I was looking at all these Democrats drinking the Biden Kool-Aid, and they're just like gulping that stuff up. And I'm like, guys,
they're doing
backflips on it.
That's right. Somersault.
So it's like, I'm like, do you guys not see the issues here?
Yes.
Are you not feeling the fact that your inflation's almost at 10% and you just continue to defend this man? I had an entire argument with my cousin. I'm like, you're deranged. You don't know what you're talking about. You're not keeping up with the facts and you're just continuing to take it.
Yeah, well, you know, the base still supports him. We think he's right about everything. We never disagree. Please, you could buy MAGA merch, okay? And that's the argument from everybody online that's still supporting this. And here's the thing. Don't do that, okay? Wear the badass Iraq Iran war t-shirt that we have, okay? Because that's promoting a true and real message. And that's the reason why we do things here like that, is so that you can be proud to wear something on your chest that is a true adventure. It's not adventure anymore to wear merchandising for a sports team that's betrayed you or sold you out. It's pro-American to be anti-war.
And don't you guys have those like 1776? Like, I mean, the original founding fathers, they had their own. That is what we should really be anchored in.
And
right?
That's exactly what my dad says. And everyone's going, you're not MAGA. You're not MAGA. Well, we were 1776 far before we were MAGA. We were constitutionalists. We were classical liberals, as we described ourselves. And look how all the art and wonder and beauty and history has been taken out of politics and all the knowledge of the people that came before us and what they said about these specific situations. And it's been replaced by an orange guy on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And the boomers just watch it. And we watch it too. So we're just as guilty.
Now,
let's go to clip one, actually.
Yeah, let's go to clip one.
Let's go to Trump.
Better quality Trump.
Prices. Today they hit $4.
We're $4, and we have a country that's not going to be throwing a nuclear weapon at us in six months.
But Americans are feeling the effects in the interim.
And they're also feeling a lot safer.
What is the plan to bring them back down?
All I have to do is leave Iran, and we'll be doing that very soon. And they'll become tumbling down. And stock prices were up today almost to a record because they know two things. Number one, we have a safe country. We had to take a little detour because we had a madman named Khomeini, who sadly is no longer with us.
Khomeini.
So all those Americans, I believe the 13 Americans dead and the hundreds of casualties so far, the hundreds of injured, it's just, you know, a little excursion, a little detour we have to take.
Wait, Rex, calm down. Just like Pam Bondi said, and now Trump's reiterating.
Dude, the stock market.
The S&P 500.
Dude, I keep forgetting about the stock market.
It's at all-time highs. That's all you need to pay attention folks. Dude, we don't care if your gas price is at $4.
Dude, when I hear that, I'm just like, I gotta vote Republican down the ticket. Like, it's just like neural programming. It just works on me. And that's what they think works on you. And they give you that information, and it's just the average American, because of the price increases, they know it's not true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like we covered yesterday, if the stock market goes up, these companies, if they might make more money, they pay themselves dividends off of these crises.
Yes. We did cover that yesterday.
Literally. We talked about that.
Crises create opportunities for the companies, and they do not trickle that down to you guys. And the problem is, like you had mentioned, prices go up quickly. They ain't coming down.
No, no. Let's go to clip number three. Let's go to Donald Trump mocks Iran to close this segment out.
The Iranian government threatened a bunch of U.S. companies today in the region, including Google, Apple.
What did they threaten them with? PB guns? They don't have much left to threaten.
My question for you is, are you...
I don't know. I mean, what are they... You made a statement. What did they threaten them with? I don't know. Tell me, how did they threaten them?
Well, all I know is that they threatened them, sir.
What does that mean?
Fair enough.
They said something nasty?
Is the government in touch with these companies? Are you helping to backstop them?
You don't even know what the threat was. What was the threat? I haven't heard it. What was the threat?
Did they say
they're going to blow them up? They're going to hit them? You know what they're not going to do? They're not going to hit them with a nuclear weapon.
Yeah. Is this something you're concerned about, sir?
No.
Iran's IRGC issues a warning that they will target 18 U.S. technology companies if the U.S. continues targeted assassinations of Iranian leaders beginning on April 1st. Those companies include NVIDIA, Apple,
most of those people are dead already. Yeah, Peter?
What do you think about this?
I think he spent too much time at the cinema. You know, I think he thinks that he's in a movie, and, you know, he may be partially right about that. He is in a movie, but it's not an action movie. It's a horror movie, and you're the monster. Like, that's where we're at right now. And he goes, they're going to threaten us with what? They're going to threaten us with BB guns? No, the strait is closed.
Yeah.
The strait is closed.
The threat is as real as possible. Iran knows they have some cards to hold.
Sure.
And so they're flexing those muscles.
Sure. And the thing is, maybe you could even make an argument that the U.S. is, quote unquote, doing well if you use the metric of, like, killing the leadership and trying to destabilize the country as a whole. You can't make the argument of, like, there is no battle, we've won the battle, when you're actively fighting.
No, that's Vietnam rhetoric.
But, like, yeah, it is. Literally.
We've bombed Operation Orange. We got all the chemicals out there. We burned a million civilians. We killed a lot of the North Vietnamese, and we're winning. But, well, sir, we haven't moved the battle lines. Well, it doesn't matter. Well, pay attention.
In Vietnam, all we had to do was establish a base, and, you know, get our people out of there and whatever. And look how that turned out, right? We're entering into another quagmire, and the thing that we discuss a lot on these shows is that you don't get to pick and choose these global decisions. Even if you are the president of the United States, like we talked about with Simon and so many other phenomenal guests, Tim, the reality of these transnational capital forces and just entities around the globe, the president and others are middle management at best. So we're entering into an age now where people have been trained to focus on the leadership instead of the man behind the curtain. Well, I'm here to tell you right now, on the American Journal, that is what we focus on, the man behind the curtain, what he's doing, who or what he actually is. And we're so happy to be here with you today. I want to remind you that for every product that you buy, you're going to get a subscription. That's a very cool offer. You're going to get or every subscription that you get, you're going to get a limited edition T-shirt. You want to get that limited edition T-shirt now, thealexjonesstore.com. I'm MS It Up. Don't mess up the URL. Go to realexjonesstore.com right now.
CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan's talked about it, I have for years. But here it is, scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public, that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells, and it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. and these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world, has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultra methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this in 2004, but I got blown up in Iraq. I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvisshowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvisshowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvisshowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvisshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
Journal. And look at that. Look at that. We're all out of nothing burgers.
We are out of nothing burgers.
We got some news for you.
Would you like some fries with that nothing burger, Rex?
I don't know. I need ketchup with the nothing burger for sure, but we're out of them. We got big enchiladas to share with you guys. We got breaking news roundup. Tim, take it away.
Yeah, so we got some new things developing today. We got a Supreme Court hearing that's happening. The Supreme Court is going to be looking at the birthright citizenship issue.
Trump wants to end
it. And Trump, I think he is going to be attending the Supreme Court as they deliberate on this. So let's go ahead and read that article, please.
For sure. The stakes in the case are high, putting on a collision course more than a century of executive branch action, the Supreme Court precedent, and the text of the Constitution itself, or more specifically, the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment. Of course, the headline is Supreme Court to weigh Trump's bid to end birthright citizenship. Trump administration officials view the order in the high court's consideration of the case as a key component of his hardline immigration agenda, an issue that has become a defining feature of his second White House term. Opponents of this argue the effort is unconstitutional and unprecedented. It could impact an estimated 15 or 150,000 children born in the U.S. annually to non-citizens.
Yeah, so this is going to be an issue because you're looking at the 14th Amendment in question here. I want to read a little bit of the 14th Amendment for you guys because I had to go and refresh my memory because they all get blurred sometimes. So the 14th Amendment says, "No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws." Now, again, this is the problem with the Constitution. It is open for interpretation depending on who's interpreting it.
Well, you got to look at the time period. I believe this was intended for freed slaves and the children of freed slaves, mm-hmm. because they would try to say, oh, like, this is a illegal immigrant. This isn't an American citizen. Right. That would be the argument now. And we live in an age now where it's estimated up to like 100 million people have migrated to the U.S. over yes. periods of time.
And look, I know why he's attacking this, right? Because if you look at it, there are people that purposely come into the country illegally. They have a kid. And then as the kid grows up, eventually they can apply to have their parents stay here because there's an anchor point. And a lot of people who come from the southern border, they are doing that. So it is tricky. You know, I don't have an opinion to where I'm like, well, we need to end the citizenship of people being born. I think it's a bit of a drastic play, and he's kind of grasping for straws here. But
America has all these incentives to come here. Basically, like, if we can pay for you to come here, we can find you a place to stay, we can give you your kid citizenship if your kid is born here, you can have remittances that you send back home. All you have to do pretty much is cross the border. And we've lived in time periods, specifically, like, we criticize Trump a lot. Biden administration was evil. He literally told them to immediately surge the border. You had people coming in hordes, giant caravans wearing Biden t-shirts. I mean, you can just look at the videos and images of this stuff. I'm not making it up. And people that are unfamiliar with that, maybe that are more on the left or liberal side, will go, hey, man, that's not true, bro. That's not true. People just looking for a better life. Yes, they're looking for a better life, but they're being exploited by a predatory system to use them as a new permanent underclass.
No, you're right. And then also they were using it to pack in specific regions to where they were trying to sway the vote more Democrat ways.
It's true. You can't argue with that. It's just a fact. And people criticize you, me, all of us sometimes, Tim. We're just like, give people information. It's just true.
Well, this was actually my number one or two issue on why I voted for Trump specifically was because of the mass migration and the illegal immigration. Because I had a lot of people who I knew who came here legally.
Right.
And were having so many problems just to stay in the country. They had been here for 6 years. They had been paying taxes like 30%+. They're making 6-figure jobs, paying into the American economy. They don't even get Social Security check at the end because they're not a citizen, but they're still paying into Social Security. So you see those situations and you're like, okay, this person's working really hard to stay here. And somebody just crosses over and
they put
you in a hotel. They say, go to the bodega, go get a breakfast sandwich and chill out for the next 10 years and you're good to go. Oh, and we'll help you get a Social Security card and we won't kick you out. Whereas they make it harder for some of these educated immigrants.
Right. And that creates a thing where we can have the debate on legal immigration, but people coming here legally are generally trying to assimilate to the American way of life, to the American protocol and program. But if you're just someone that comes over here and you get flown out by the Biden administration, they give you a hotel room, they give you a credit card, and they say, look, we don't care about you learning English. We don't care about you becoming an American citizen. We don't care about any of that. Even if you wanted that, just have all the free money, go out on the street and start selling street food. And, like and then why would you assimilate? There's no reason to assimilate.
No, you're right. And the last thing I'll say, if we want to take a more left-leaning position, and I look at these things specifically, is our immigration system and the processing system for people to come in here for asylum, which there are legitimate cases where you're like running from the cartel and they're trying to kill you and your whole family. Makes sense if you might want to try to come to the United States, but it's hard for them to go through it through a regular process because the courts are so backed up. And they don't have a real process to actually get those people. And so people are like, well, I'll just skip the line and I'll just come in here. No. You need to wait your turn in line, come in here properly. But then we also need to make sure we have the systems in place and focus the energy on making it better.
I support extreme immigration restriction and potentially a moratorium, probably a moratorium if I got my way, just because of how we've been used kind of as an open invitation and open invite to the world for so long. Here's the thing. The United States legally takes in between 1 and 2 million immigrants a year, the most out of any country or up there, I believe. So the idea of America being like the fascist neo-Nazi state where it's like, we don't want the immigrants here. We take in millions and millions for years and years.
It needs to be controlled immigration.
Well, we need our country back. We need our country back, and then we can worry about having more people come in here because we don't have a country right now, okay? And we want people in here, if they are going to come, that want to be a part of our country, not a new mutated thing.
Yes. That is the biggest key, is making sure that you have the best interest of our country in mind as you go into our system. So that way you're actually pushing the country into a better direction, not degrading it and going backwards. So
sure. Like we want ridiculously patriotic people. Let's get into this next story. I'll read the headline if you want to go into it a little bit.
Yeah. So this next one, I found this morning. We've got an American journalist that was kidnapped in Iraq. Her name is Shelley Kittleson. That is a terrible situation to be in. Go ahead and read this article.
Yeah, sure. Just a little quick thought. You ever hear about those insane people? They're like, we're vegans and we're going to go bike riding through Sudan and prove that the world is love. And they get like raped and killed. Yeah. Like, I know she's a journalist. I am not leaving the continental United States.
Absolutely not. FAFO.
Good grief. Okay. RIP. Super sad. We hope she's alive. I don't think she's dead. Shelby Kittleson, a contributor to All Monitor, was contacted by U.S. officials multiple times with warnings about threats against her. Pray for her safety. Not trying to make light of anything. Sorry. Bit pigheaded of me to do that, including as late as last night, a U.S. official told News Nation, Al Monitor is a Washington, D.C. based media organization offering reporting and analysis from the Middle East. Here's the quotation. We are deeply alarmed by the kidnapping of Al Monitor contributor Shelby Kittleson to Iraq on Tuesday. We call for her safe and immediate release, the outlet said in a statement. We stand by her vital reporting from the region and call for her swift return to continue her important work. Alex Putsis, a non-resident senior fellow with the Atlantic Council and former Pentagon official, confirmed the abduction. Okay, so this is confirmed on social platform X, adding that he is Kittleson's designated U.S. point of contact. Damn, she is the sweetest person in the world. She doesn't have a mean bone in her body. Putsis said in a text to News Nation affiliate The Hill, adding that she's an American citizen who has worked in Iraq for years and also reported from Syria. Very, very tragic. We hope that she is back home, free, safe soon. Absolutely horrible.
Yes.
And another, hopefully not, casualty of this regional conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Who's grabbing
it? I mean, those areas are destabilized at this point. I mean, not a lot of people still talk about Iraq or Afghanistan, but they're still going through their own sets.
They're blaming Hezbollah for it. A current U.S. official blamed Khatib Hezbollah, an Iranian-backed military group with ties to the RGC, for her disappearance. Plitzis also suggested on social media that Kittleson might have been taken by Hezbollah. I said, read that again. The group is reported to be financed by, in part by the Iraqi government. Two cars, let's see if we can get this up, reportedly involved in the kidnapping, one of which crashed, overhead shot or article please, in the town of Al-Hasba while fleeing authorities. The Associated Press reported, look at that damage. Dude, he got shredded. One suspect was apprehended, but their identity has not been shared, the ministry said. And these are two damaged vehicles potentially involved in the kidnapping.
Insane.
Yeah.
Insane. Now, this might be independent in a vacuum. It may not pertain to the Iran-Israeli-America war. Or it could be connected. But, I mean, Hezbollah is one of those proxy nations that is out of Lebanon.
I don't know if I believe that they took her.
It's independent?
It might be people trying to get money. It might be them. Might be somebody else. We'll track this as it develops.
I don't want to speculate.
We'll keep an eye on this story, Tim. Good get there. I want to go to this Larry Johnson clip making his Iran war prediction. And I have that here.
He hasn't made the final decision yet, Larry. I think that he is hoping that there is some sort of deal that emerges out of this with Iran. Do you see that as a potential possibility?
No, none at all. In fact, what he's done today, and this is open source, I'm not revealing any classified information, they are deploying F-16s. New F-16s are being ferried out of Germany into Israel and or Jordan. They're not flying across France or Spain because they've said they don't want any U.S. aircraft to fly that way. A-10s have now departed the United States. A-10s are en route. There is only one reason for those. That is close air support for ground troops. It has no other mission. Apaches have also been loaded up. Hold on.
They've used A-10s in the Straits, Larry. They've flown the A-10s at low altitude in the Straits to kind of shoot at Iranian fast boats. So I think there's a world in which the A-10s get used in theater for a different reason.
That's the point. He's not backing off. He's ramping up. This is ramping up. The reality is Iran has destroyed 13 multi-million billion dollar radars, 13 of them. That's why that AWACS was in the theater the other day, because the AWACS was making up for those 13 radars. You know, two or three of those radars went for over $1 billion apiece, and another three or four were in excess of $500 million. We burned right through those. The fact of the matter is we have now depleted our Patriot missile batteries and the THAADs. They are depleted. And so we no longer have what is supposed to be our main defense against Iranian ballistic missiles. So this war is not going as Donald Trump and the Department of War are claiming. They are lying to the American people about what's happening.
Money, 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 money,
money. Money gone. Money burned, dude. that's the thing. It's like they hit that signal plane, the AWAC or whatever he said it's called. I'm not a military expert, just a geopolitical enthusiast at the end of the day. They hit that plane, and that plane was only there because of all the radars being blown up. So, like, this is not whatever Trump called it in the clip, a minor excursion or like a little detour. We got to take a little trip, you know, down the road to get some milk. Well, Dad took a trip to get some milk and now Dad's not coming
back. Hey. At least we know where the $200 billion is going.
Yep.
We know where it's going, guys. So the new F-16s and the new planes that are flying over there, I was surprised that France and Spain did that. Where they said, you're not allowed to come through our airspace.
Well, I mean, the cracks are really starting to show. And you think about Europe as just the biggest, like, lapdog vassals for the American Empire. And granted, Italy and Spain, they're a little bit more on the fringes, a little bit more nationalist than, say, like, UK, France, Germany, like, countries like that. Like, Keir Starmer is our, like, punk B-word. And we literally, like, we do whatever we want. That's where, like, we're sending bombers in and out of there right now. And they're like, we're not involved. And they're like, you're directly involved. But these other nations, they have more of a spine because it's – the emperor has no clothes. He's naked.
I think for France, Macron has been pissed off. More than any other European country. He's been disrespected probably more than any of the other European leaders. Remember that motorcade where he made him walk like five blocks to the White House?
Yeah, Trump made Macron walk down the street like a plebeian.
So and he's got like TMZ in his face, and you got all the cameras flashing.
Little guy on the street, hey, take a photo,
take a photo with me, and it's like
you're not on like NCIS. Like,
and he's on the phone with Trump. And he's like, hey, man, I can't get past this barrier. Can you do something? He's like, no, you can walk. It's only a short distance.
You know, France isn't a real country. The U.S. is America is a real country. You have to walk here.
Well, and just not even just that. And we'll go back to the original point.
Sure.
Is you look at when we have the U.N. and the speeches that go on there, and you see Trump, and he's like, you all suck.
Yes.
You have no military capacity. You are nothing without America. They remember these things.
Well, this is an excellent tie-in. Let's go ahead and go to the article. Trump wants to take us out of NATO because of Iran. Let's go to the New York Post one.
Oh, this is the video. Yep. Look at that.
Yep.
He's like, sir, I need to go.
Wow.
He's like, yeah, no, you can walk.
I am the president of France. Really? I walk down the street like a broke actor in Austin, Texas. You gonna take a photo? No, I'm like, I am Macron.
No, like, come on, he's pissed. It,
Unbelievable. The guy kisses him on the forehead too.
Oh no! Dude, he got mogged, bro. He got mogged walking down the street. That's about as bad as it can be. Let's go to this New York Post article because it ties in perfectly to everything you're saying. Trump strongly considering pulling U.S. out of NATO over Iran alliance. A paper tiger.
That's what he calls him.
Trump claimed NATO, quote unquote, wasn't there for the U.S. when Washington rallied behind its European allies in the face of Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine. We've been there automatically, including Ukraine. Ukraine wasn't our problem, he said. It was a test, and we were there for them. We've always been there for them. They weren't there for us. Trump's skepticism of the alliance has been well documented with dates back before his 2016 election win. He has previously described the alliance as obsolete and told the Washington Post in 2016 that NATO was costing us a fortune. What does it look like to you?
Yeah. Again, more of the rhetoric. Now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
This guy is the NATO defense secretary. I believe Mark Rutte is his name. He comes from one of those nothing countries up in Scandinavia. He calls Trump daddy and he's gay. He's gay. Openly gay, and he calls Trump daddy. He says, you know, daddy Trump, we have to listen. Like you were the children and you are daddy Trump.
Guys, these are people in positions of power.
It's a big problem.
Now, the NATO thing has been something that Trump has been pushing for a while.
Right.
I give credit where credit's due. The other European countries, they were not paying their fair share. We were being the bodyguard for every single other European nation. Now, you look at the situation now, you know, you can't just bring everybody into a war and then cry when it's not going your way and just say, help me.
You can't declare victory in the war and at the same time say it's not a war by calling it a little excursion or a detour and say that Americans should be happy because it keeps us safe.
Could you get that meme pulled up? I know I'm jumping out of
order. Oh, yeah.
Because it just ties perfectly.
Yeah, let's get
this
Trump NATO meme.
And we'll keep talking here. But like, yes, I mean, you're doing the backhand thing and you're telling people one thing and then you're actually slapping them and punishing them for another thing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, this meme. I actually laughed.
Yeah, it encapsulates everything.
It does encapsulate everything.
But like, these are unforced errors, people. These are unforced errors. These are things that, like, you do nothing, you get a better result. That's what an unforced error is. Oh, NATO sucks. And then he invades Iran.
Puts the tire on. I used to do that as a kid.
Why is Europe doing this to me? Yeah, it's like you did it to yourself. All you had to do was do nothing, basically. And like, we had these people eating out of the palm of our hands. And I think, you see the biggest reflection of American power in that there are still nations that are obeying us and listening to us. And we've lost so much in this past month. We've lost so much credibility.
We have.
Imagine if we just spent that credibility on making deals and making things better around the world. Guys, that's the message we want to convey. Just imagine how good your life would be if there was an actual trade deal with another power that actually had resources. But oh no, we can't ever work with them. Russia, China, evil, evil, evil. We are the best. How's that working out?
Well, here's the thing. China is positioning itself now. They have done a masterstroke of genius, and this is not me praising like China. I really am America.
China first. Number one.
I do not want China to beat us in this race in terms of power. Like the United States, when it's on the right side of history, does make the right decisions. It is a net positive. But clip number 7, I just want to quickly play that before we go to break here because it shows, I was looking at this and it shows specifically how you have to buy the yuan for gold.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, how were they able to like, they've been sitting and plotting. This is what I call 40
chess.
Well,
it's Confucianism. All they have to do is wait for us to, you know, tire ourselves out, but we'll go to the clip. Excellent point.
On Russian oil, which tells us how desperate the situation actually is getting. And of course, China has the payment rails. Now, what's interesting is that the yuan is not actually freely traded. Like, you can't just go buy it on an exchange right now like dollars or euros. The only practical way to get yuan is to sell something China wants. And historically, what China's always been willing to accept is gold. So the actual transaction looks something like this. You sell your dollars, you buy your gold, you sell that gold to China in exchange for yuan. You take that yuan to Iran, and then you buy the oil, and your ship gets home safely. All right, so China now gets to sort of be right in the middle of this transaction. It gets to decide the exchange rate between gold and oil, which means China's deciding what the dollar is worth relative to everything else.
copying U.S. homework. Not good. Bad, bad, bad. Not allowed to do it.
You know, but this is what I'm saying. This is 4D chess.
Yeah.
When you look at how China's positioning itself, it knows that getting into military conflicts and trying to bully everybody around openly does not work. They're like, let's do something different. While America degrades itself, rips its own limbs apart, let's go ahead and position ourselves to where everybody realizes, hey, come over here. It's safe with China. Right. You can trade with us. Right. But then the gold is the main thing. Gold is a commodity that everybody in the world values.
Right.
There's going to be a point at which the American dollar, this fiat currency, is no longer going to be trusted. And the whole point of fiat currency is it's backed by the faith.
And that, when trust that, falls, it falls out of the sky.
It falls out of the sky. So imagine now you're like, okay, I want physical assets now. And America's gold is slowly being drained, just like in the 70s, which is why Nixon had to take us off of the gold standard. Rex, we don't even know how much gold we actually have in Fort Knox.
Rumor is we don't have any. And here's the thing. Oh, the Fort Knox audit, the U.S. Treasury audit of all the gold everywhere. Notice how we heard all about that and they get rid of Elon. We don't hear anything about that anymore. They said they wanted to take cameras in there and live stream it. I mean, we need, here's the thing.
That would have been fantastic.
I think at the root of what all of this is it's an attempt to distract us. Like all these crazy stories we get every day, all the constant BS and clips. It's a crap screen to just get us blinded to the reality that's taking place around us. Because if you've been paying attention, if you've been watching what's going on, we're being ushered out. We're being replaced. The Chinese are coming to eat our lunch and they're copying our homework to do it.
And the Russians are right behind them, brother.
Yep. That's
right
very
behind
true.
Them.
Very
they're
true.
Making money hand over fist, and they get to benefit from all of the oil and be China's best buddy. So the two of them have been winning this Cold War, unfortunately.
And it's so mysterious. And this is why we point out the Israel issue so much. Is like, why would you do this? Why would the West do this and cede all this power to China or Russia? We've heard the argument from Chase that it's about the IMEC corridor and it's about securing that. But like, we can't win in that region. Yeah. To have that conflict, to have the reason to have the conflict, it's not a decapitation strike. It's a new world war.
And I know Simon kind of had a more complex theory where he was talking about the financial industrial complex and all the things that they're moving around and positioning where there's those people that are controlling scenes. But it's very hard to tell at this point who's actually pulling the strings and what the implications are 5-10 years from now.
Sure, and even more rapidly than that, we talked about how time seems to be speeding up. Well, we hope you're feeling it with us here. We're getting through the first hour here. Join us in the second hour for the great, phenomenal deep dive done by Tim Tompkins. And after that, we have Suleiman joining us in the third hour. Breaking news, breaking updates, the hard-hitting action you want. Gray Area American Journal. Let's go.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this. That's where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification and the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel, so good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product, it's supposed to be available right now at thealexandstore.com, is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexandstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, We have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theolivestonestore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theolivestonestore.com, and I thank you for your support.
Why would you hold the data for 75 years, all of the clinical data, for 75 years from these if you were trying to be transparent? Tell me why.
This is a person who was vaccinated four times by Pfizer, 1 year since vaccination, tumors emerged, person was dead within a month. We got three biopsies out of them, one postmortem. All of them have SV40 and the origin of replication from the Pfizer vaccine.
SV40, or simian virus 40, reared its ugly head back in 1960 when scientists spotted it lurking in rhesus monkey kidney cell cultures that were being held to whip up polio vaccines. SV40, a tumor-making machine, has the large T antigen, a molecular wrecking ball that smashes into cellular control systems like P53 and retinoblastoma protein pathways, turning normal cells into rogue cancer factories. Fast forward to 2025, and messengers from a myriad of professions are shouting from the rooftops about SV40's presence in the COVID vaccines.
These vaccines are not vaccines. They are, in fact, a gene therapy based. This genomic integration, as the scientific literature makes clear, can lead to cancer development, immune system disruption, and more. The sheer levels of contamination detected, up to 145 times permissible limit in some cases, are extraordinary and far beyond what should be allowed in any medicinal product. In my work as an oncologist in the UK, I started to see a disturbing trend as early as February 2022. Patients who had been cancer-free for many years were suddenly relapsing with aggressive, explosive cancers shortly after receiving booster doses of the COVID-19 vaccine.
I'll tell you a good story.
Okay.
I have three friends. All three of them had stage 4 cancer. All three of them don't have cancer right now at all. And they had some serious stuff going on.
And what did they take?
Yeah, Jesus. They took some, what you've heard they've taken.
Ivermectin.
Fembendazole.
These three advanced cancer patients experienced remission in two cases, complete remission, and in one case near remission, for an extended period of time, years after initiating this fembendazole protocol, and none of them received chemo either, right? So this was with, it wasn't combination, a few were with a surgery, some did receive a brief dose of radiation, but in general, this fembendazole was linked to extraordinarily, it's accelerated tumor reductions in a pretty short period of time with extended survival outcomes with no evidence of disease.
Yeah, I was off their charts, 1,498.
Yeah, the chart didn't even go that high.
That is something else.
That was December 31st. I took my first course of ivermectin on my birthday, February 2nd. February 11th, my CEA was down to 180.
Raise that up a little bit. Wow.
Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite.
All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down. I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue.
I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. I just can't shut up about it. Up about it.
This stuff works, man.
Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
You thought the leaden winter would bring you down forever, but you rode upon a steamer to the violence of the sun.
You're listening to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
And the colors of the sea.
This is Tales of Brave Ulysses by Cream. It's a classic song by a classic band, Tim. And we're all sailing on the sea of life. We're on a voyage. We're on a journey, like a white wine mom might say. But it is true. And we're going to go into the deep dive now and talk about those factors.
Yeah, deep dive is my favorite part of the segment personally, because this is the time period where I get to show you guys the research that I've
been doing. Tim is extremely analytical.
I'm super analytical. I love doing this stuff. So I like to talk about specific issues that are affecting you at home. And one of the things that we need to talk about today is about housing prices.
Right.
Now, there are mainstream media narratives. There are narratives that even I believed myself, but right. I wanted to challenge my assumptions. Now, there's sayings that like BlackRock, Vanguard, institutionalized investors are buying up all the homes. It's leading the housing prices going up. And I originally led with that, right? But it was lazy of me to not look deeper. So I said,
we've done this deep dive before. This is an excellent deep dive.
We've done it. And I wanted to look specifically into what's really happening behind the scenes, because it's never that black and white. There is a gray zone to where we have to focus on. So let's just start out here. You know, if you've tried to buy a house lately, you have felt this, and we can go ahead and pull up number one here with the housing prices. But, you know, before we talk about why the housing is broken, you need to see what normal used to look like. So for most of American history, buying a home was not easy, okay? A normal house used to cost about three times what the household per year made. And then if you worked, if you saved, you could actually get there.
And that was the fact of the American economy is, hey, even if you have a factory job, whatever, especially if you do, you're going to be able to, based on your income, afford a place to live.
Right. Okay. And so you've got the prices rose, but the income did not rise.
Right.
And so now you see the relationship is gone. And if you go back to that chart, starting in the early 2000s, you can kind of see that the prices take off after 2020.
Right.
And then they explode, and then the wages never catch up specifically. Okay.
Wow.
Right. So now we also need to talk about like who's getting pushed out, because it's not equal across all of the, age groups. But yeah, if you look at this, 5.8 times price to income ratio. Now it used to be 3.5. 5.8 is a very big jump, and you just see how the wages did not dramatically increase. And we're going to break down so we understand how did we even get to the point where a house costs $433,000.
Right.
So let's talk about the median age first at 1.1, because this is also important. So in the 90s, first-time buyers used to be around 30 years old, okay? then now they're pushing 38. And just look at the end at 2024. 38 years old is when you're expecting to buy a house. And Rex, think about it this way.
Right.
Remember, like everyone, I was always wondering why 30 was the marker for us specifically, because as the American person or a young person, we're told that like 30 is when you want to start thinking about kids. You want to start right. thinking about having a house, those types of things. But now we're not able to do that. And so this leads to people needing more time to save. They need more income, and now they need more help from family. And you're seeing an increase in people being dependent on family in order to help them buy this.
Harrison house. Threw this up, and he threw up this image of the real stock market, not asking the crew to be wizards or find it or anything, but he shows it's the number of people that are 30, married and have their own house. And since the 70s, it's literally like that.
Yeah. You're 100% right. But age alone doesn't just explain the story. The real story shows when you compare the paychecks to the prices, and we can actually see where the prices and the wages split. So let's go up at number two. And this is the one we already covered. We're actually going to go past this. Okay. So we're going to look at
1950 to today.
Housing prices and income used to rise together. Then you had 2000, in which they split, never coming back. And then the prices rise faster than the pay. Saving doesn't help. Promotions don't help. Think about promotions too. If you get a promotion or you stay within the same company, you're not getting enough percentage wise each year to be able to have increased income. Sometimes there are companies, I worked for a company where they were giving 2% raises each year.
Oh.
And that didn't even beat inflation. And I'm sure a lot right. of you guys back at home right. experienced that as well, where your employer, rather than paying you to retain you, is like, okay, well, let's just give him a 2% and hope that he stays.
Let's get the robot in here in, you know, a couple quarters.
Yeah.
Get
so let's go ahead and pull up that graph again, because we can look at the split here. So like we're saying, look at the beginning of this. You're looking at the 1950s through the 1960s, and then you have that split that happens during the 80s. And you just see the trajectory. Those are prediction graphs. This is going to continue, and this is what even a K-shaped economy looks like. So you're looking at this chart here, and we're like, what happened in the 80s? Remember, I talked about this yesterday. 80s was Reaganomics. That is exactly when the inflection point and all of the corporations and all the businesses decided, hey, let's stop paying the employer that's helping us produce actual productivity and increase the productivity. Let's just go back and invest it into the company. Now we also need to talk about the houses themselves, because not all houses are created equal. And you got to look at the average house, what it looked like during the 50s versus now, and it's dramatically different. So houses never just got, the houses didn't just get more.
Really quick, we got Harrison's chart up here. This is the 30-year-olds that are married and own a home. Look at that. Look at that. You start up around 50%, and then you go down from 1950 to 2025. We scroll down. Look at that. Lower or about 15 to 10%.
This is a reality for our generation,
It's declined like 500%.
Yes. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that are going through this experience. There's a lot of millennials that have now reached the 30s where that's the point at which they want to get the house.
Here's the thing, right? Like, we're entitled as American citizens to be able to live in our own country, to be able to afford to raise a family in your own country, to be able to come home from work every day and have it not be a George Soros coffin apartment.
Yes.
Right? And like, here's the thing. Everyone else, up until the era of the boomer and maybe the Gen X, it got better, it got better, it got better. We are the first generation that's looking at living less long, it's looking at owning less property, having a lower standing of liver, or of liver, lower standard of living. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah. No. And you're completely right about that. And people are feeling that on a day-to-day basis. Now, if we're looking at the average housing size, we can look up at number four.
And that's also shrunk as well.
No. Grown. The house have grown. So we've now demanded more. So look at the 1790. The average home used to only be 831 square feet. 2023 and
2200.
Yeah, 2200. In 2019, the average was about 2500. Now we're coming down in size. The thing that's important here.
Oh, people got a little too big for their britches. Not they had that money, not they had that bread. Spoiler alert, pandemic war.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, okay, there's two things to look at here. You've got the number of people that used to live in a house. So more people used to live in smaller houses, and now you have people with bigger houses with less people living in them.
Sure.
Because people are having smaller
people
families.
People used to, like, sleep together like seals.
Well,
like
not just warmth. That. You're having people actually have less kids now,
sure,
as well.
Absolutely.
So you're going to have less of a household. Now, also we need to look at the amenities, because back in the 70s and the 1950s, you had bigger families. You only had one bathroom typically, and then you had no AC, no garages, none of those things, right? And so now today you have over 2,300 square feet. You've got smaller households of people. You've got multiple bedrooms. You got central air, garages, you know, things that, like, you require code to type in, and
right,
it's the technology. And the reason why I bring this up specifically, guys, is because when you have a bigger house, it means more material is required to build that house, which makes the house more expensive on its own, just from,
right,
a fundamental perspective.
Yes.
So that is a clear distinction why you're not going to see a house cost the same. It's not all of them. I'm just giving you one angle to understand. And then when the standard for people is it needs to have central cooling, that also means there's a cost that's associated with that. Like, central cooling unit costs like $15,000 alone, especially some of these newer models. Mm-hmm. So then all of that, when a construction worker or a contractor goes to build a house, they have to take all of that into account of, okay, people are expecting modern amenities, they're expecting these things. We have to bake that into the price of the new home. That way we can actually make money, because no one wants to go into a business.
And we got a ton of these places
money.
Now around the country that are hyper-regulated, to where, like, there's another additional, like in California, I assume there's another six figures minimum if you want to build anything.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Go ahead.
Yes. And just, let's look at the housing construction size on 4.1. Maybe it's is that something that I have up there?
Or am I
off here? Yeah. So over the past few decades, over the past few decades, the average size of the American home has seen significant increase. 1950s, the average home measured about 983, and then it accommodated about 3.37 people per household. And this is the thing that we just covered. But then you're looking at something else, and also it's about not just the houses getting bigger, but also most of the land near the cities that people wanted to live near were not actually fully developed. So, like, let's go back in time and think,
right,
about what Dallas and Austin used to look like,
well,
let's say, in the 90s.
Especially Austin. I mean, not even the 90s. I can think about when I was running around in, like, the 2000s or even the early 2010s. You go to an area like Dripping Springs. Let's take Dripping Springs as an example. I used to live out in Dripping Springs for a number of years by Onion Creek. Phenomenal area, great people, my favorite area around Austin. Absolutely love it. But it used to be like a wasteland out there. There's,
yes,
absolutely nothing. And when you go out there now, it's like an airport.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an airport now to get in there to go past the Y.
Yes.
None of that was there even 5-10 years ago. And when there's no land, when you have these houses get more expensive, they're bigger, there's no backyard, you live in the home.
Yes, and that is part of the story. And the other part that I'm highlighting is when there is no when there aren't as many homes, right, or an area has not been as developed, that means,
right,
the land is typically cheaper at that time.
Sure.
Okay? So the closer you are to the center of a city, let's take Austin, for example, and you're in the center, it goes out into a ripple effect.
Right.
And so you look at it now, Georgetown, which is the farthest north right now for,
yes,
where civilization is now the new frontier. But it used to be that North Austin, which is only 20 minutes from downtown.
Very true.
Used to be the point at which was the last frontier.
Very true.
So now,
do not go to Leander. Do not check out Leander. Leander is terrible. It's all built up. It's awful. You don't want to go there. It actually is a very nice area.
Right. And then, so the point I'm trying to make here is about not just location, but everybody wants to live near a city and in an urban region. It didn't always used to be the case.
Because there's the amenities and the people.
It's the people. You want to be able to do things. You don't want to live, I'm sorry for anybody who's from Kansas, I lived there for a couple of years. I'm just saying this. Most people don't want to live in the middle of Kansas where there's not as much going on versus one of these bigger metroplexes like a Dallas
or Austin or Nashville. There's more social and financial mobility.
Right. And then just look at the population alone. You had 150 million people in the 1950s and then over 330 million today. So the population has almost doubled.
more than doubled since then.
I love the myth of our census. We don't know. God knows how many people are in the United States of America. It could be 300 million, could be 400 million. Who knows?
Right. So now what I'm getting at here is this is a supply and demand issue as well.
Okay.
Okay. So you've got on one point, more houses have now been developed in these larger cities because more people wanted to live there.
Right.
And then you also have, not as many homes being built to catch up to meet that demand. And also as more people flock, like in 2020, Austin got put on my radar, somebody who didn't live in this region.
Oh, people just started coming here.
Yes.
They started flooding here because of the pandemic and the less restrictions here. They didn't have to worry about the stuff going on in California and New York. I'm telling you, that was apocalyptic. Seeing all the people come in like 2021, 2023.
Yes.
They found out during COVID.
Right. So as a consequence, more people, bigger population, more demand equals higher prices. This is one aspect. Now let's talk about the starter home, because the starter home has also disappeared specifically.
They used to sell kits where you build a house, Sears catalog.
Yeah, so starter homes used to be how people used to get in. They were simple, they were affordable. And about, you could pull up number five here. In 1982, about 40% of new homes were starter sized. Now in 2023, 9%. It's only 9%.
Wow.
And it's not because people stopped wanting them. It's because zoning blocks small homes, parking rules raise cost, and permit freezes don't scale down, and all of those costs hit the construction before the construction even starts. And like I was saying, remember, these construction workers and contractors need to make money on the actual building itself, right? It costs, there are hard costs that go into the house itself. So it's not profitable for them to create a starter home because of the margins now. Okay.
Well, they can make more money. It's just like we see the egg price people, even though they got a consistent supply and they could make the right amount of cash and help people. It's not about helping people. It's all about the bottom line. Yes. That's because of the monopoly problem.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, and there's a bunch of things, right? So we're going to play this thing showing you what it's like in California, showing the permit process. But before we get to that video, I want to explain something, how these prices are already baked in. Because when you look at a house, you've got permits that are needed. You've got fees. There's reviews that happen that cost money. There's delays to the production.
Survey. Yes.
And altogether, all of these costs end up being 25% of the final cost of that home.
Wow.
Right? So these costs are flat, and then the small house gets hit hardest. So now it pushes them to build bigger houses to actually cover for the fact that they know that 25% cost. Because
they've
got to
make you pay for luxury, quote unquote, even though they're robbing you.
Well, it's not just that. It's the red tape. We've created red tape over a long period of time where we have all these regulations. And you know who's suffering the most from that? California. It is not practical to be able to build a house in California. And we're about to show you why. Let's go ahead and play this clip that shows.
Right now, in terms of home prices, zoning, and the worst housing shortage from the entire United States, let's talk about California. See, in many large California cities, a lot of the zoning requirement is dictated by parking. So if you want to go and build a brand new 600 square foot unit, you also have to supply an additional 300 square feet for that resident to park their car. If they wind up building that parking on ground level, that takes away from the space that they could be using just to build another unit. But if they go below ground, that costs a lot of money. So either way, that needs to be figured into the cost of the overall unit and eventually the price that you pay. This also isn't including all the other requirements like a minimum lot size, a minimum amount of open planted space, or a minimum amount of common space. And all of a sudden, building a 600 square foot apartment is now costing you the equivalent of building 1,100 square feet with everything else that you have to add on to it. And of course, they have to charge like you're buying or renting 1,100 square feet. You also have this completely backwards permit system that creates indefinite delays, where to run plumbing, you have to get a permit for that. But before you could get that permit, you have to go to a different department to get a permit to dig a trench. But to get that permit, you have to go to a different department to be able to start the work after an environmental review. Oh, and you also risk getting denied for a permit at every single step, at which point you have to resubmit and start over again from the back of the line. Even for me, I spent over $200,000 building out a 720-square-foot unit. I paid over $10,000 in city fees and permit filings. But then they charged me another $20,000 to fix a sewer line, which required me to go and get a permit from Urban Forestry to trim the city-owned tree roots. But the tree turned out to be diseased, so I had to get another permit to be able to remove the tree, and another permit to be able to replace that tree with another tree. You can't even make this up. Getting these permits, by the way, could take hours, days, weeks, months. You have no idea. They could be denied at any point where you have to start the process over again.
You see, do we see the equation? When I talk about this deep dive and as I'm giving it, I'm just giving you guys facts impartially. I'm not skewing you to one way or another. I'm just telling you the reality of the situation because it is just easy to pin it as, well, it's just this one problem. It's a multitude. So
it's rot.
Yes.
It's total rot. And this is how empires fall. It's very Roman. Mm-hmm. That's what I think.
And red tape and regulation, it always starts off as good intentions at the beginning.
Right.
But then they get carried away. They forget why they make the rules. They add another rule on top of another rule. And then pretty soon the system gets clogged. And then you're spending all of this money just to build a basic house. Okay. And then we're paying for that on the final price tag. And that's right. Also why you're seeing prices, because houses get a comparison. A house that's built in a neighborhood gets priced comparatively to the houses in the surrounding. So if all those houses are being improved or they're brand new, that means your house also is starting to get raised higher and higher and higher. You can't just have one house that's in the neighborhood that's $1 million and then everything else is $100,000.
And that's like, it doesn't work. That's like the water level for the people. And we're just trying to like not drown. We're trying to stay above water, and they just keep pouring more water and more concrete in the pool. And they're like, swim, swim, swim. The economy's great. Everything's wonderful. Well, how are we supposed to actually address these problems and get real solutions if we're not acknowledging that the problem is happening?
Yes.
And Trump comes out and says, well, it's good that house prices are up because my constituents, the older people, they're happy about the value of their property.
Hey. All you got to do is get a 50-year mortgage. That's the solution.
Down 50,000, stock market record off.
Going to debt for 50 years. That was the solution.
1,000-year mortgage. Why can't your great, great, great grandchildren help you buy your home? Oh, we want the 1,000-year mortgage right now.
Yes. So the solution is very simple. This is one of the things. Let's deregulate some of these areas so we can build. The last thing I'm going to cover, and I'm going to cover this very quickly. Okay. It's actually, we stopped building enough housing. So let's pull up number 7 very quickly and look at U.S. construction starts. These have dropped off dramatically. Houses rise. The prices rise. Supply is supposed to follow, but it didn't. And after 2008, the home building collapsed and entry-level construction never recovered. So right. Population kept growing and the supply is not meeting it. You're seeing that we're not building enough homes to actually keep up with all of that demand. And that is a true supply and demand issue.
Yeah, and they're locking themselves out by building these luxury places that no one's going to be able to afford. What happens is the depression comes in and we see a whole new market.
Yes, and then COVID happened. COVID made the situation even worse. And then now you're in a situation where they're not able to build enough houses. And also, it is more profitable for them to build luxury apartments because they're not making any money on these new construction houses, which we could be doing if we incentivize the construction.
They want to put you in a condominium prison for the rest of your life. You're going to pay for everything there. You get your DoorDash there, get your little snacks and goodies, your Walgreens, and you don't leave the mile within the complex. That's what they want. That's what a 15-minute city is.
Yeah, forget about the backyard. What do you need? You need the elevator to get you up and down.
That's right. And when you use the elevator, you're using the evil energy because you're an evil human. You have to pay your carbon credits every time you do it. And hey, use your key card. We'll get rid of keys. You don't need a key to your house. Give you a key card. Use the key card that uses power too, even if it's just a cent a day. Like, don't you want to pay to make the planet better?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Hey, we're going to be back with the deep dive here in a moment. We've got a little bit more left to cover. But again, there are a bunch of factors that are coming into play here, and I'm covering them all for you.
Yes,
you're gonna want to stay tuned. It gets even better. Okay, we will be back after the break. Thank you for staying tuned.
Indeed.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 50-20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades, so they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation. Total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
Secret during the deep dive. We've got it up on the screen right now. That's right. 1,000-year mortgage. Make your great-great-grandkids help you buy that beautiful Miami home that you want.
Hey, this is the best deal since sliced bread.
That's right.
You can pass this on to your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandkids. Okay.
And that's amazing. Hey, isn't that backing America's future? And that's the argument they used to sell it to you. The continuation of the deep dive. Tim Tompkins, take it away.
Yes. Okay. So I
covered a lot of things. I'm just giving you guys each point. What's all these things are, all these factors are stacking on top of each other, contributing to why housing prices have continued to increase. We're seeing the picture. Now, another thing that we need to look at is the interest rates, especially what happened during COVID. Okay. So let's pull up the interest rates here. Here's what we got here. So COVID didn't create the housing prices, but it did make everything worse. If you look at it, we have these things called the golden handcuffs is what I call these, and
right,
what the industry's calling them. It's basically showing you on this chart that only 20% of people have over a 6% rate. A majority of people actually have a rate that they locked in during that 2021 to 2022 period where they have under a 3-4% rate. And then all of that combined together, you're looking at a majority, over 80% have about under that 5-6% range. That creates a lock-in effect in which people don't want to leave a house,
right,
to go and get a new house at a 7% rate, which they are going back up, by
sure,
the way.
Sure.
So this lock-in effect creates another shortage within the supply chain. And,
right,
you know, props to you. Whoever was out there while, like, interest rates on the federal level were at 0% and you could go get that loan for 2%, I applaud you. I really applaud you because, you know, I got the 6.5%. And let me tell you something. As a young buck, I really wish I was just born. Maybe, Rex, we should have just been trading or doing something in 2009.
We wish
in
we were
grade.
Boomers, man. We wish we were boomers. And then we would be sitting on the beach with, you know, all the stacks of cash and whatever, right?
Yes. So now that everybody's locked into place and the rates are super high, they're not coming down, and over half of the population of homeowners are actually below 4%, it means that they're not giving up. So who's actually to blame? And this is usually where the story goes wrong, and this is something that I also fell privy to. And you probably heard this narrative. You were like, Wall Street,
right,
buying up all the homes. Private equities buying up all the homes. Blackstone, institutional investors, everything, right? Now, as I was almost hesitant to cover this because I'm like, people are going to think I'm an agent being implanted for these corporations,
right,
to tell,
right,
you
to back BlackRock. Yeah,
yeah, to back BlackRock. God, I wish I was getting a paycheck from them.
Right.
But, you know, no, I'm not. I would
we
never sell my soul.
We talk about reality here.
I would never sell my soul. But all I'm saying is you can take it or leave it. You can fact check me on everything that I'm about to tell you. They're not actually the ones driving up the prices. They're not part of the equation here. They only a very small percentage. So let's actually do this fact check. Let's pull up number 9 and look at the actual fact check of institutional buyers.
You want me to read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Fact check. Do private equity firms own 20% of single family homes? No. Large institutional investors, defined as those owning over 100 homes, which includes private equity firms, own 3% of the single family rental stock nationwide, according to Bookings. The share is higher in some local markets in the 20 metropolitan statistical areas where these investors are most present. They own 12.4%. But they still own far less than 20% nationwide. The Urban Institute similarly finds they own just 3.8%.
Okay. So if we're breaking this down, the institutional buyers, the ones that we're talking about, BlackRock, Vanguard, all of
State
those,
Street,
State
yeah.
Street, they're only buying less than 2% or less than 3% of the actual homes, which means they aren't statistically significant to be actually moving the market.
Well, let's read the second half of that article. Let's get that back up because I think that's touching on the point you want to make. Considering purchases rather than holdings, investors, those buying non-primary residences, bought nearly 27% of all homes sold in the first quarter of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And it did
go up. What they're looking at here in the first part is the entire supply. Then they kind of took the scope. They zoomed in. Okay, well, in this year, how many? And that is because investing in real estate has become popular, and there's a lot of people that stepped in the market calmed down. The market was on fire, by the way, from 2020 all the way through 2023. You couldn't get a house without going over asking price and going on these bid wars.
You had all that money floating around from the stimulus.
Yeah, you had all the money, people were ready to buy houses, and then that kind of dropped off, and that's when some investors started to step in and started to buy up the houses, which leading to that. So let's actually pull up number 10 here, because mom and pop landlords are actually the ones that are contributing to the biggest supply of investors. And mom and pops, they own about 80% of investor homes. Now let's look at this chart here. 80% is mom and pop. I'm considered a mom and pop. I have only like a couple of investment properties. I worked very hard.
Right.
But it wasn't something I was given. But you've got this situation here. That's the majority of people. Okay. And then you've got 14% is regional investors. Those are kind of like smaller conglomerate, not those big State Street, Vanguard, BlackRock people. They're like kind of people who buy in different areas, but they're still kind of mom and pop.
Right, right.
Okay. And then we've got institutional investors at about 3%, and you've got smaller national investors at about 3%. So the 80% is the thing to be focusing on here, because now we have to understand of that, let's pull up number 11, the percent of homes owned, because I want to compare the investors to people who are actually right. living within the house and are not considered investors, people who are just like you at home who have a house, maybe you don't have a house, but the average American, and we can compare the two
sure.
and just see how much. So investors are only owning about 20% of all U.S. homes.
Okay.
Okay. This is the key distinction. That means 80% are people who are actually inhabiting the house and living out of it in the typical American dream, as you would call it.
Sure.
That breaks down the argument here where we look at, well, it's just the big companies and the corporations buying it. That's a lazy way of explaining it. And I used to take that position too. What is your thoughts?
Well, sure. And it's like you explained, that's kind of the default. And we hear about these companies and how much power they have over our economy, and that they all basically own each other. Like BlackRock owns State Street. State Street owns BlackRock. Vanguard owns both. They both own Vanguard. That's how it works. And you see this shadow system, go, man, like, is this the reason for this? And you go, yes, lowest common denominator, Occam's razor, simplest explanation is usually correct. Sounds like they jacked up the housing market. But you look at it more as a systemic problem that's been impacted by inflation, the various crises yeah. that we've had, and ultimately the overregulation that's designed to force yes. people out of business.
Rex, you're 100% right.
And that's why I do deep dive.
Everything comes down to a supply, demand, regulation, all of that getting priced into the market. Also, when we made a bunch of free money and there was more liquidity and people right. had money, that also contributed to the problem too.
I mean, take it for an example, the retail sector. I mean, you look at Target, you look at places like Nordstrom. I mean, during the slush fund period of 2021 to 2023, they had at the end of it, when things started to fall off, I believe like $5 billion in inventory that mm-hmm. they just couldn't move because they had bought so much.
Yes.
Because the demand was crazy, right? No, and it just fell off a cliff.
You're right. And if you would think that this is only happening in the United States, you are surely wrong. This is happening across the world. Let's go ahead and pull up number 12. You've got these situations happening in Canada, Australia, UK, Europe. All of these different places are experiencing the same thing that America is. And I want
to- Western problem.
It's not just the Western problem. This is what I want to highlight. Let's go ahead and roll this clip.
Price of a typical home divided by a typical household's yearly income. In a healthy market, that number sits around 3. But this year, something unprecedented happened. For the first time in the report's 21-year history, not a single market was considered affordable. While conditions vary, most of the 95 cities now fall into the seriously or severely unaffordable categories, meaning a typical home costs more than 4 to 5 times what a typical household earns. And in 12 of them, things have gotten so bad, they added a new label. Impossibly unaffordable, where the median home costs more than 9 times the median income. At the top of this list is Hong Kong at 14.4 times income, and Sydney isn't far behind at 13.8. Then comes San Jose, Vancouver, and Los Angeles. And once you start looking beyond those cities, you realize the same pattern repeats across entire countries. Homes in Australia's average city are now near 10 times median income. Even smaller markets like Perth or Brisbane are now less affordable than New York. In Canada, affordability has been collapsing since the mid-2000s. Vancouver has ranked amongst the fourth least affordable cities on earth for 18 years straight, and Toronto isn't far behind. Greater London homes now sit at 9 times median income, while the UK average has crept to 5.6, which is roughly double what it was in the 1990s.
Okay, I think we're
good here. Even the United States, well known.
Okay, so, you know, it's very easy to get blackpilled about these things. This is also a solution-based show where we try to think about what are other countries doing as well as America to combat these, because people are starting to wake up and realize that these are issues, and housing affordability is a number one or two issue for a lot of people, right? So let's go ahead and play number 13 and look at some of the global solutions, things that people are doing specifically to combat this.
Stop this.
Some countries are starting to try. New Zealand launched a plan called Going for Housing Growth in 2023, which forces major city councils to zone enough land for 30 years of housing demand. Their goal is simple: make land supply predictable so prices can't spiral out of control. In the US, cities like Minneapolis and states like California have begun loosening single-family zoning. That means duplexes and small apartment blocks can be built in neighborhoods that once allowed only one house per lot. This opens up supply where people actually want to live. Singapore is taking a completely different approach. There, nearly 90% of households own their homes, thanks to a massive public housing program managed by the Housing and Development Board. The government buys land, builds at scale, and sells apartments directly to citizens at subsidized prices. So yes, this shows that if you treat housing as infrastructure, like roads or schools, you can achieve near universal ownership. Then there are countries tackling speculation instead of supply. Hong Kong and Wales both tax second homes heavily. In Wales, local councils can charge up to 300% council tax premium. Taiwan taxes properties sold within 2 years at up to 45%, discouraging fast flips and speculative buying. And in the Netherlands, some municipalities have banned investors from buying in certain neighborhoods to keep homes for locals. The US is now exploring a similar idea with the End Hedge Fund Control of American Homes Act. This act would stop hedge funds and other big real estate firms from owning single-family homes altogether. So yes, to fix this crisis, we need more homes, but we also need to rethink who's buying them, where they're built, and what kind of economy they're fueling. Because at its core, it's the same old story: a tidal wave of money flowing into a handful of assets and drowning the middle and low-income classes in the process. And unless that imbalance changes, no amount of zoning reform or new construction will make homes truly affordable.
Okay, so you guys have seen it. I'm pretty much done with this deep dive. I just want to clarify something for the audience here. Again, this isn't me trying to create a narrative where I'm trying to push you in one particular direction. All I am trying to do is challenge your existing beliefs, just like I challenge my own existing beliefs. And that is the key to these deep dives here. Again,
yeah,
we always label as it could just be this one issue. And often I'm looking at a lot of issues that we're doing these with, and they're much more complex than we give credit to.
You say it's a key thing for the show for us to do the deep dive. I think it's a key thing for everybody to do this type of thing, you know? And like, what we want to do, what you do such a good job of, Tim, is disseminating the information for people so that we can actually become enlightened and aware on these topics. And even if you go, hey, I understand the housing market. Hey, I understand the oil market. Hey, I understand World War II. I understand Vietnam. There's always something worth finding if you're going to take a second or a third or a fourth look, and we forget things over time. So what we do, hopefully, is generate a spark that lights a fire in you for more information. We hope you seek that out and compare and contrast our notes to yours, and it's about making ourselves better.
You guys can fact check me on everything that I covered today. I am completely open, and if I'm wrong about something, DM me, you said... I'll correct myself. You know, I have no problem admitting when I'm wrong, but I feel like I did a good job of focusing on the information, distilling it down, because I do spend a lot of time doing this research.
This is the key, and this is what's so amazing about being able to do the show with you guys. Me and Tim here in studio, we do Gray Area Thursday, Sunday, but we're here 5 days a week, basically doing the morning show now on the American Journal while it's around. The thing that's so amazing for us is this is a learning experience, right? We're getting better at finding things. We're getting better at presenting them. We're getting better at connecting with you, and that's ultimately what it's all about. So if you're happy with this, I really highly encourage you to go to TheRealAlexJonesStore.com. That's TheRealAlexJonesStore.com or TheAlexJonesStore.com. You can get the brand new Zeolite 72% off when you subscribe and save. That gets locked in. I think it's $16.99. It's a lot more, but hey, you get it locked in if you get it now. You get the subscription offer. That's exactly what you want. Just $16.99 a month. You're locked in for life as long as you stay subscribed. After the sale ends, the price jumps back up to what I was saying earlier, to $24.99. You're going to want to try this incredible chelator, heavy metal, detoxification, all sorts of incredible stuff to research and look into about zeolite. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com. That's thealexjonesstore.com. I want to show clip 10. Okay, I want to show clip 10. I want to present it. We don't need to play the actual video. I just want to pause it on the general. And this general, I was over at my grandparents yesterday. They were watching Fox News. They had this guy on the screen. It pisses me off. Let's go ahead and show this guy. This is Jack Keane.
end this regime once and for all. And an enduring, stable Middle East, something we haven't seen in our lifetime,
really,
is on the horizon.
All right, so if you're not noticing, if you're not watching right now, if you're listening to us in your car or at the gym or whatever you're doing, God bless you, good morning. Rex Jones, Tim Tompkins, American Journal. He's got a Israeli-American flag pin, okay?
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of that.
He doesn't have the American flag. He's not representing and backing America. He's representing and backing the American-Israeli Empire Alliance regime, whatever you want to call it. This is unacceptable.
Yeah, this is the foreign entanglement that we talk about. You know, no country should have this much impact. Now,
imagine if that was China. Imagine if that was Russia.
If that was China, I would have a riot.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm okay with us having relationships with the rest of the world.
Sure.
Cooperating, making good deals. You know, Israel has the same right to negotiate as China, as Russia, fair. Those types of things, yeah. As long as we're getting fair and equal deals. But again, you dictating or influence our government to make a specific decision is another thing. The Qataris do the same things. The Saudis do the same things. I mean, look, the Qataris gave us they gave us like a new Air Force One and said it wasn't a bribe. So these foreign entanglements are difficult situations and the American people are looking at these.
Here's the problem. It's treated like our 51st state. Okay. That is the issue because we could talk about the Qatari funding, which is massive, the Saudi funding, which is massive. Ultimately, we're not acting like Qatar or Saudi Arabia is our 51st state. They're not wearing Qatar or Saudi Arabia pendants.
Right. Yeah.
It's so wild to me because we've talked about it numerous times, how you have these Gulf states. We'll talk about it with Suleiman coming up in the next hour. You have these Gulf states that are essentially, you know, dictatorships built on colonial line drawing.
Yes.
Right. And then that's the seat of the power. That's all the interest. But that one place in the region, even though all those other nations are allies and give us money, give us bribes, whatever, that one other nation, Israel, they wear the flag like it's the state that they're from. He's not wearing the state that he's from. He's wearing another country.
Yes.
Pretty crazy.
And just look, I'm kind of seeing why they're doing this. It's a signaling thing. There's people who are in
high positions of power. Oh, hell yeah, it's a signaling thing.
There are people in high positions of power who do control things behind the scenes. And I think it's that pushback because you're seeing a lot of people speak out against these things that Israel did.
So they're signaling, I'm still on the team.
Yeah, it's signaling you're still on the team. Now, I don't agree with every single thing that comes out where people are criticizing certain aspects about all like Jewish people, and they're throwing everything under an umbrella. But we can be critical of people like Netanyahu who have a clearly a aggressive nature and a tone towards dictating how that region should be run.
Here's what's so evil about Zionism. Zionism attempts to attach a political ideology onto an ethnicity, onto an entire group of people. We got plenty of Jewish people that don't agree with what's being done by the state of Israel right now and the various genocides and wars that it started or engaged in, right? But they want to make that the definition. They want to make the IAEA definition of anti-Semitism the law of the land. It got struck down by Rand Paul, thank God, but it's true. They literally say you cannot criticize the state of Israel because to do that is to be against the Jewish people. Well, hey, I'm sorry. I thought these were countries. Okay, I thought these were countries with laws and rules. I thought we were allowed to criticize them, criticize China, criticize Russia. You're not being anti-Russia. You're not being anti-Chinese. You're being anti that country.
It is a lazy excuse to say, well, it's anti-Semitic. Just the same way, like, I would criticize somebody. Like, I criticize some of my own people and some black people who are like, well, that's just racist. I'm like, no, you can call out a specific group if they're doing something wrong is wrong. You don't get to hide under this veil of being a minority in some sort. Like the Israelis and the Jewish people are a minority in certain aspects, but that doesn't give you plausible deniability to say, well, everything is anti-Semitic.
Right.
And you're being racist about this thing. But the thing that I'm looking at these situations and I'm like, okay, well, at what point do we address the elephant in the room and separate ourselves to where, you know, the founding fathers had a true, let me gather my thoughts here. The founding fathers, they had a clear roadmap and they talked specifically about separation of church and state for a particular reason because religion and ideologies are tricky. Okay.
They didn't want a government run by religion. They didn't want us to have to fight these crusader style wars.
Yes. Crusader style wars is exactly the point that I'm getting at, because religion, and people can criticize me for this, is the best and worst thing to happen in humanity. Okay. And I'll give you the explanation why. Okay. Bear with me for a second here. Religion is one of those things that you get spirituality, and it is super important for people to believe in something, especially Christians. You're supposed to gather under the faith of the Lord, be a good Christian. There are good values that are in there. The problem is when you have bad actors that use the religious ideology to push an agenda that is not within the actual context of what is being the spoken word.
Sure. I mean, the Pope came out and said, you know, God doesn't answer the prayers of people that have blood on their hands, right? So you have all these presidents and all these people, Netanyahu, prime ministers, constantly invoking God. It's the holy mission. You know what the holy mission is like a bloated corpse of a kid that's being eaten by maggots on the side of the street.
Yes.
Like that's what war is, okay? You're not a Navy SEAL. You're not a veteran. You can't talk about war. We've all seen the photos, okay? We've all seen the footage. We all know what war is. War is murder and death, and there's never a religious justification for it. Yes. In the modern world, that's what we stand against 100%. I want to go ahead and play this to close it out. Let's play clip number 8. All right. This is an American soldier a decade plus ago, I believe 12 to 13 years ago, 2012, talking about the wars and why they're fought, and look at when they pull them off the air.
And we have here somebody who actually did just go vote for Ron Paul, a first-time caucus voter, Corporal Jesse Thorson, who is 28 years old, and you are active duty U.S. Army. What did you vote for Ron Paul?
Well, I'm really excited about a lot of his ideas, especially when it comes to bringing the soldiers home. I've been serving for 10 years now, and all 10 years of those have been during wartime. I'd like to see a little peacetime army, and I think he has the right idea.
Now, you have done 2 tours in Afghanistan. You told me you're going to go back for a third tour. I mean, if you can see your neck right there, what you have on your tattoo, 9/11, remember, and a picture of the Twin Towers. You know, some Republicans out there have been saying that Ron Paul would be very dangerous for this country because he wants to bring troops like you back from your post from all over the world.
Well, I think it would be even more dangerous to start nitpicking wars with other countries. Someone like Iran, Israel is more than capable of.
Ooh, dangerous.
Sorry, we just lost our tech connection, unfortunately.
It's always a mistake. Oh, we got to cut it out. We got to cut it out. He didn't even say anything crazy, saying, hey, let them fight their own battles. If they want to go to war, let them fight their own wars. And what we're finding out in Lebanon with the 12 tanks destroyed and the tons of Israeli soldiers, IDF soldiers killed, you have the fathers, the mothers showing up to the Knesset saying, hey, I wanted my kid to come home.
Hey, I got a great idea. It's a new foreign exchange program.
Okay. All right.
The neocons and the politicians that want to be in war should trade their place with a soldier for a month.
Yes. Right? Lindsey Graham.
Let's put Lindsey Graham. Yes.
Instead of a bubble wand, give him an M16, put him in the trenches. Tank operator Lindsey Graham. We need to see it.
Yeah. You know, get him on the front lines. Let's put him in Afghanistan. Let's put him in Iraq. Get him suited up.
There are these big boys with guns. I'm very scared now.
So that
you probably like it.
That way they know what it feels like to be one of our soldiers and what it feels like to be this guy who went through 2 tours and is like, I would like to see a little bit of peace, because those people live in very hard conditions and are under extreme amount of stress.
Sure. Well, you know, Lindsey Graham is the combat lawyer. You know, so he is a veteran. So that gives him the right to send people off to war and die. Man. And that's a key point to make. We're going to be right back. We have the great Suleiman joining us, the best live updates, the best information on the developing conflict. You don't want to miss it. You want to stay right with us here on the American Journal, murdering your morning, sticking the knife in and twisting it. We're killing that time, having a great time with you. We love you out there in cyberspace. We are in the void.
Here at the InfoWars studio in Austin, Texas, there's not a single desk, workstation, or studio where you can't find a half-empty product from thealexjonesstore.com. That's because we all put our money where our mouth is. And you too can be confident that you're putting into your body the absolute best supplements, nootropics, drink mixes, and tinctures that money can buy. So to all of you who are on the fence about ordering from thealexjonesstore.com, what are you waiting for? And to all of you who've made the commitment, we here at InfoWars salute you, and we'd like to say,
thank you for your support.
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 Thank you for your support at thealexjonesstore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
14 days to flatten the curve, wear the mask, take the shot, you can't get COVID, you can't spread it, all horse crap. And they used COVID to derail Trump's last recovery, and now, as I predict, they're using war to do it.
If you spend too much time on Twitter or get your news from the liberal mainstream media, you may have gotten the impression that the president's supporters are abandoning him in droves over Operation Epic Fury, his war to prevent your grandchildren from having to face off against a nuclear-armed Iran. Our hapless president has been dragged into this war against his will by the nefarious Bibi Netanyahu, according to people like Tucker Carlson, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Megyn Kelly, and now Joe Kent. Alas, none of that is true. The narrative that MAGA is split over Iran, beloved by the liberal media and the anti-Israel far left and right, is complete fiction. Far from a betrayal, poll after poll after poll has found massive, overwhelming support for the president's strikes on Iran among Republican voters, upwards of 85%.
Here's what I tell President Trump. Keep it up for a few more weeks. Take Karg Island, where all of the resources they have to produce oil, control that island, let this regime down a vine. Mm-hmm. I trust DOD. We got two Marine Expeditionary Units sailing to this island. We did Iwo Jima. We can do this.
Welcome to Pegasus. Thank y'all for coming. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Trump is against that entire globalist plan of austerity and against their carbon taxes. That's why I've supported him so much, because compared to the Democrats, it's night and day. He really is returning national sovereignty to America and making our own decisions. But my God, then don't make the wrong decisions now that we have a president back in charge. This is so paradoxical, and it's so love-hate for me. And I know I've been right, and I've been proven right again. It's our own government's assessments, for heaven's sakes.
And the last time I saw Charlie Kirk on this earth was in June, in the West Wing, in the stairway. And I said hi to him, and he looked me in the eye, and he said very loudly, and it's a small, you've been in the West Wing, it's small, it's a tight space, and he said, Joe, stop us from getting into a war with Iran. Very loudly.
He was single-minded.
And he walked off, and he went, I believe, into the Oval. So when one of President Trump's closest advisors, who is vocally advocating for us to not go to war with Iran, and for us to rethink at least our relationship with the Israelis, and then he's suddenly publicly assassinated, and we're not allowed to ask any questions about that.
That's why the head of the Counterterrorism Center, Joe Kent, quit this week, trying to get Trump to pay attention and change course. Instead, they've been attacking him as a traitor and saying he's a leaker with no evidence.
I can say this. He said very strongly that Iran is not a threat. Iran's been a threat for 47 years, and there's not a country in the world that doesn't agree with me on that. So I take this guy, Joe Kent, who lost twice for Congress, pretty badly and tough, and it was devastated. And I know that he lost his wife. So instead of letting him live out his life, I brilliantly have my people call him and offer him a job in security, essentially, in the White House. And what does he do? He goes out and he says that Iran is not a threat to get publicity. Now, he probably signed up with CNN.
Joe Kent, the former director of the United States National Counterterror Center, this is from Semaphore, he just resigned. He's now under FBI investigation for allegedly leaking classified information. And the investigation predates his departure.
His opening remarks with one other fake news, and that is that Israel somehow dragged the U.S. into a conflict with Iran. Does anyone really think that someone can tell President Trump what to do? Come on. President Trump always makes his decisions on what he thinks is good for America. And may I add, I think what is also good for future generations.
All the anti-Semites, to all the isolationists, I don't believe. Forget it. I'm not with you. I'm with Israel. I will be with Israel to our dying day.
It's the Israel lobby that has the main muscle. I'll be pushing this. It's a foreign government. It's illegal as hell. I don't care if it's China, the UK, the EU involved in our politics, and they are too, and it's wrong. We're standing up against that. We're standing up against what Israel's doing. It's wrong, folks. It's unconstitutional, it's illegal, and it's treasonous for anybody.
What's this? Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this? I've got Methyl Drive. The two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
In the American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
We are powering through your morning. We are honoring it. We are honored that you chose to spend this time with us here on the American Journal. Now, almost as always, we have another phenomenal guest for you. Tim, tell them a little bit about Suleiman. Let's introduce him. Suleiman, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Suleiman is a great friend of mine now. He hosts a lot of spaces. He's one of those people that is currently on the ball in news, everything. He's very active. I mean, this guy is on spaces like 12 hours a day. He's covering everything.
Since the beginning.
Since the beginning of the conflict. And he's very knowledgeable. He has degrees. He has a lot of knowledge to back it up. So, Suleiman, let's get you on here because the people need to understand some things about what's going on. But we want to cover about you specifically as well. Suleiman, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on. I really
appreciate
it. You
put on the jacket for us. We're all professionals. See, yes, we're all professionals in the studio now.
Yeah. Exactly. We've got to go professional. We're in the big leagues now.
Yes. Yes, sir. Yeah. We wanted to have you on. We had you on the gray area. We're like, this was a fantastic conversation.
Yes.
And we were like, all right, we need to make this happen. So I'm glad we could. Suleiman, let's just talk a little bit about your background because not a lot of people know you on the InfoWars and a lot of people want to know, you know, what got you into all these things, what's your background, just a high level overview so that people understand.
Yeah, sure. So, my background is I've got a degree in law and then a conversion into mathematics, became a mathematics teacher. Then I've got an MA in philosophy, and then I was doing my PhD in philosophy when I became quite viral on X.
Right.
And the thing with becoming viral on X is it becomes very difficult to finish anything related to academia because you get a lot of complaints. And so I thought, look, what's the best thing to do is just pause that, make sure that I'm, continue my career in terms of from the media perspective, the journalistic perspective, and then I can go back and complete my PhD. But yeah, that's currently my academic background in terms of, obviously I've studied as well in a religious setting as well. So I have a decent background of the understanding of Islamic religion. whether it's legalistic theory or theology and philosophy. So that's kind of my background. Obviously, I'm from a socially deprived area, so I've done a bit of everything when it comes to before social media and before my kind of academic career.
Right. I think you do such excellent coverage on the region because of that and many other factors. Of course, you're just very well studied in really all forms of geopolitics. Doing the breaking news updates, I believe you were doing them during the 12-day war as well, correct?
Yeah, we were 24-7 during the 12-day war. We were 24-7 now as well up until, I believe, a few days ago, maybe the first 22 days, and then we've kind of reduced it to like 15, 16 hours.
Yeah, I got to ask you, Suleiman, how do you do it?
Yeah.
Like Rex and I will come on here, we'll do a 3-4 hours, we'll debrief afterwards, we might have a show in the afternoon as we do gray area, but we're like gassed, and I wake up, Suleiman's on. I go to sleep, Suleiman's on. Yeah. I'm like, this guy is a
killer. This guy is blue,
right?
The birds are chirping, Suleiman is on X-Giving breaking up.
So how do you manage to do that?
You gotta just work hard, put the effort in. I've got Beatrix who helps me with the spaces. I've got my entire team of people who come on and give really good analysis. So I'm privileged in the sense of we've got a great team of people who come on the spaces and really contribute. If I had to talk for 15 hours, I think I'd be struggling.
We definitely hear that. What are you seeing right now? Breaking news updates you want to give people really just over the past week of coverage that y'all have been doing the live reporting. What's going on in the Gulf right now?
Well, a huge amount of things are happening in the Gulf. We can deal with each thing at a time. So the first thing is obviously Iran has been hitting the Gulf quite hard. Initially, they were hitting the U.S. embassies and the military bases. And the reason was because those countries were colluding with the United States of America and Israel to destroy Iran. They tried to make it look like they weren't involved, but we know that they were indeed involved. They were allowing these countries to use their air base. We know now that they were, without a doubt, allowing them to use their military bases. In addition to that, they were giving them key intel. And that's one aspect of what they were doing. In addition to that, and separate to that, what we know is that is there's highly likely going to be, and I'm sure we're going to cover this in detail, a ground invasion into Iran. And these countries are complicit in the ground invasion. If you look at where the ground invasion is, and I'm sure we're going to go into detail into that, but depending on what the locale of the ground invasion is, the stationing area could be UAE, Kuwait, or Saudi Arabia. So these countries are complicit. They have been helping the United States of America and Israel bomb Iran, and they need to be held accountable. And so when I see these countries being hit by missiles and drones, I'll be honest with you, it gives me great pleasure, not only because of their complicity in that, but as you guys know, when it comes to the UAE, I view them as Muslim Zionists, and they have been helping not only the United States of America and Israel, but if you look at what they've done in the Sudan, if you look at what they've done in the Yemen, if you look at what they've done in terms of perpetuating hatred against Muslims in Europe and in the West, generally speaking, if you look at the treatment of the underclass, I just see them as almost a sister to Israel.
So I have a question for you, Suleiman, because you were talking about the soldiers earlier.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to Rex about this. I'm like, there's no way this doesn't become a bloodbath because Iran knows this has been happening. Everybody's been talking about
this
for weeks.
2 decades.
Right. So, you know, let's say we use the UAE and in these regions as staging grounds. I don't see how like thousands of Americans don't get slaughtered if we even try to land 1 foot on that island. I mean, they probably have landmines and stuff on the island. Everything's, are the Iranians prepped as much as the rest of the world is thinking?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And one can only surmise that. Yeah, I agree with you. There's going to be a bloodbath. The question mark becomes, what are they going to do and what the aims are going to be? So, I mean, look, there's a few possibilities on what they can try and take. They can either try and take Karg Island. That's one possibility. The other possibility is they could take the 3 smaller islands, which UAE lays claim to, which is Abu Musa, the greater tomb, and the smaller tomb, the lesser tomb. That's one option. The other option is, those are the 2 options. The other option is, the third option is they could take the 3 Hormuz islands, which is Hormuz, Lavarak, and the third island, Akhazem, I believe it is. So they could take one of the 3 Hormuz islands, or the other possibility is And I'm starting to think that this is slightly going to become more and more of a possibility, is a ground invasion into Iran as well. So all of those things are possible.
Yeah, I want to ask you about this because my dad had a caller on his show yesterday. My dad's very anti-war. He's very against all the operations going on right now. And this caller calls in and he says, Alex, you're wrong. I'm a Marine and they would never sacrifice the Marines. My dad used the example of kind of like a pawn sacrifice to open the engagement. I think that's exactly what we're seeing here. We have this kind of sacrificial array of forces and it's just like Vietnam. It's just like Iraq. We have to do this one thing. We have to secure this one base, this one area. They get slaughtered. Oh, we got to do full ground invasion. We're at total war. What do you see the likelihood of just a mass expansion? And like in a month, we're looking at a totally different conflict.
I think what you're saying is extremely accurate. And I have been thinking about this a lot. And I am moving more towards that position that actually this may be done intentionally in order to sacrifice American lives in order to then galvanize the American public. You know, you can show these American soldiers in caskets,
yes,
their families grieving, and then you can basically manufacture consent into a ground invasion. That's a possibility. Or the other possibility is this is all a bait and switch, and actually they're going to do the ground invasion immediately through. And I've got some ideas about where they're going to try and do that. But yeah, I do believe that both of those things are possible. It's either going to be a operation into one of those islands, you have a large massacre of people, and then you manufacture consent for ground invasion, or it's already going to be, and actually all of this is a bait and switch, and they're going to do the ground invasion straight away.
But Suleiman, you know, I look at this, we've played these situations out over Iraq, Afghanistan, we see the ground invasions don't work. I'm more leaning towards the island scenarios that you've drawn out, but you know, even if we take those islands, how do we even know that that's going to ensure that the strait actually opens? Because they still can launch from the mainland. And, you know, you're talking about these Marines being on this island, getting bombarded. They're probably going to be having drones launched at right. them every single day. And that doesn't stop the IRGC from launching its boats and having rocket launchers still launched at oil tankers. So how does taking those islands even lead to the opening?
So I don't think it will. I think it's going to fail. But I guess you're asking what's the kind of motive or what's Trump thinking?
Yeah, it's like, what's the goal?
Yeah. So I believe when it comes, and obviously the goal is different for each one of them. So for Karg Island, the goal would be this from Trump's perspective. He thinks that he can take control of the island. It could take a day or two to take control of the island. Their hope is that basically Iran's military is dispersed within the island. They're not aware about which entry point there's going to be. By the way, I disagree with this, but I'm just telling you what they're thinking is going to be. And they'll be able to get the soldiers in. They'll get the Marines in through the sea, through the land, through the amphibious unit. You take control of the area. Then you basically use it as a staging ground. You hope, and the thing is, what you've done is you've got Iran's oil infrastructure within there. Like 95% of their refinery goes through there. Now, they can realign that, and they would lose about 50%, but 50% loss is huge. And so what you do is you take control over the oil infrastructure, the oil refineries. And then what you do is you basically, you give Iran a very difficult decision. Do they bomb them or do they destroy their own oil infrastructure? If they destroy their own oil infrastructure, that will set them back decades. And so the hope is, or their hope is, that Iran doesn't do that. And then you've got that as leverage. And then you say, look, we'll give your oil back if you give us back the Strait of Hormuz.
Wow. So you're involved in a lot of these breaking news updates and on the ground conversations with people. We're talking about the Strait of Hormuz. The whole conversation is about it. It's shut down, but there's another potential closure happening very soon. The Yemeni people, the Houthi people, they've entered the conflict, they say, as well as Hezbollah. Potentially talk about the impact of a Red Sea shutdown. What's going on there?
Yeah. The Houthis have entered the war. At the moment, the strikes are limited. They've sent a number of missiles to Israel over the last few days. They've also said that any ships that are from the US and Israel will be stopped in the Red Sea. So that's already happening. But they haven't done a total shutdown. If they were to do a complete shutdown, that would have a major impact on the global financial market. You would see oil prices go well above 150, possibly even to 200s. It would be uncontrollable.
How likely? How likely is that scenario, that eventuality in your mind? Just a quick question.
Okay, so my sources on the ground tell me, obviously it's exclusive that I'm from audiences, but my sources on the ground tell me that actually if the United States of America does boots on the ground, they will shut the Red Sea.
Escalation ladder. Got to keep going up it on both sides. And they have escalation dominance because they have more they can do than we have to do.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. I think everybody around the world is looking at this and like, okay, we're getting two different stories about whether there's going to be a peace deal, there's not going to be a peace deal. You and I talked about it on your Spaces, Suleiman. I thought the 15-point peace plan was very generous for the things that they were offering or Trump was offering. And a couple of the points I didn't quite agree with, Iran getting, you know, extra capacity to control the strait and having all the U.S. military withdrawn. So is there a way for them to come in the middle, or is it just like we're past the point?
Are they negotiating?
Yeah.
Are they? What's going on?
Yeah, I don't believe they're negotiating. What's happening is you've got Pakistan, Turkey, and I believe Egypt, who are almost acting as conduits. So what they're doing is taking the American information and passing it on to the Iranians. The Iranians are very clear. They do not want an agreement. They do not agree with those demands, even though, as per what you just said, those 15 demands are very much Iran-friendly. If you remember, before this war, one day before this war, Iran agreed to 0% enrichment. This was confirmed by the Omani mediators. This agreement allows for up to 60% enrichment as long as it's used for civilian purposes and defense purposes. So this is a very much friendly, Iran-friendly deal. It's also something that Iran would be amiable to. There is a couple of things in there that I think that they would need to add, such as possibly they're saying reparations, but largely the rest of it, it is very amiable to Iran. And what it shows is what we've been saying, that Iran is winning this war. No way would America have given this 15-point plan, which is so Iran-friendly, if they weren't losing the war. And this is what we're seeing right now.
But why would they deny it? Why would Iran say no to it? That was my thing. I'm like, if it's so friendly, is it because they know they're winning? They're like, we want more? Is that what's going on here?
Well, I think the reason is because they know, and Trump said it yesterday. So I said this before and Trump confirmed it, that that deal, although it looks brilliant, it looks like an amazing deal. The problem you have is, which Trump said yesterday, the Americans and the Israelis will just be back again in a year or two time. And right now you've got them exactly where you want them. They've made so many errors in this war that they've got themselves in a situation where they're very weak when it comes to Iran. Next time Iran may not be as lucky, because America, as I know the Israelis always make this mistake. They'll make the same mistake all the time, but the American military is actually very proficient. They won't make the same mistakes again. And so the issue is, Trump said yesterday, he said, well, when we're going to finish this, we're going to leave this war, and then another president may come and try and bomb Iran for their nuclear facilities. So what they're saying is, I'm going to leave this job undone, and then someone else is going to come and bomb. And this is the biggest problem Iran has. This is why Iran should never agree to a deal. And actually, I say worse than that. Iran has been way too soft. Iran, in my view, needs to go harder against the Gulf countries. In my view, they need to give them 3 days notice and say, you need to basically remove all American military bases. You need to make sure America is not involved in your country. If you don't, in 3 days, we're going to destroy your entire infrastructure, your desalination plants, and you'd give that warning to the UAE first. And I believe that they'll bend the knee. But if they don't, you take out them, and then you do it to each one of the Gulf countries one at a time. I believe that Iran, in my view, has been a bit too soft in this war. They've done really well, but I think that you need to be cutthroat.
Well,
and I think they've not been as cutthroat.
We look at something else that's gone on, and it's been very interesting to me to see the mad dash, not just of Trump, because everything Trump does has to be done now. We declare victory now. The war is over now. I've already won. But we look at Netanyahu, okay? And you can say America's involved in this war, heavily involved in this conflict. It's a big drain on us. Israel is literally right there. Okay, so they're not thousands of miles away. They're right there. And while all this is going on, while their cities are being bombed, while they're in conflict in this war with Iran involved with us, they're invading Lebanon. They've displaced a million plus people. There are buildings exploding everywhere. There's rubble everywhere. I believe they've lost 12 tanks fighting against Hezbollah. First off, how do you view the ever-expansive nature of this war? As in, like, how many more of these regions will it just swallow up? Will it expand to places like Syria and Lebanon as it already has? And do you think that they have any control over that or where it goes?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer that this is part of Israel's expansionist agenda. They want to expand throughout the region. They want to take control of the entire region. But in terms of what you mentioned, in terms of Lebanon, they are losing really badly. And this is what we predicted before this war. We predicted this in 2006. We predicted this in 2024. We predicted this now. There was no way they could defeat Hezbollah. They don't know. Hezbollah knows the terrain really well. They know the landscape really well. They've hit over 130 Merkava tanks. I believe they've taken out more than 80 Merkava tanks. In one of the days, they even took out almost 20. So they are struggling really badly. They've had a huge loss of life. They've not been able to penetrate in any areas. So what they did yesterday was, which is what you're showing right now, which is yesterday they start bombing specifically those areas in South Lebanon. Because they've not been able to succeed in the ground invasion, what do they go back to? They go back to just bombing from the air, hoping that this causes dispersion of the troops. But that won't do it, because actually what they've not learned, again, from previous wars, and this is because of the part of the military analysis, is Israel's continue to always bomb areas before they go in. But what happens when you bomb areas? It causes a huge amount of rubble. When you basically cause a lot of rubble, your tanks can't get through, and then you require bulldozers to go in to remove and disperse the rubble, and that just means more tanks are going to be taken out.
I heard, so silly. Yeah, no, I heard Lawrence Wilkerson talk about it, the great colonel, and maybe he's been on your program, heard him talk about it, I believe, with Larry Johnson. He says, yeah, they don't even maintain proper following distance with the tanks, and they roll in, they all get slaughtered. It's because they're not used to actually having to fight a professional military battle, used to killing little kids.
Didn't they have to call reservists up too?
425,000?
Yeah, so not all of those people are combat ready, if I quite understand the situation.
Yeah.
That, you're so right about that, making those errors, but worse than that, the U.S. military did an analysis of the 2006 war, and the U.S. military literally said to them, look, these are the mistakes you're making. You're bombing areas and then trying to bring tanks in, and then that's how Hezbollah is able to take you out. They never learned in the 2024 war. They got destroyed. They had to go back, and they're doing the exact same thing, the exact same mistake again. So it's not only a lack of military capability in terms of the soldiers, but it's a lack of military understanding or nuance, arrogance, and not even looking at the analysis that's even given to them by their U.S. partners.
Okay, so one thing that I want to touch upon, because you were talking about it just before we talked about Lebanon, was about Iran taking a harder stance and going harder in terms of, like, the demands. Okay,
yeah.
I want to push back just a little bit, you know, because we like to have healthy debate here. And I don't see a scenario in which the United States ever withdraws their troops without that region forcefully. Right. We would rather maintain our ego to be the military power within that region and have, you know, the Gulf states struck, and it would just accelerate the war to where the Gulf states will attack back. And Iran has just as much to lose. And their government is kind of in a shaky situation, because there is a lot of instability within the population right now, regardless of who's stirring the pot and things like that. So I'm just trying to understand, like, how does pushing harder do any good for Iran at that point? Because I don't think that's the solution.
Excellent question. So I had the same view as you, I'd say up until a few days ago, because I've been really thinking and reflecting on this. And the way Iran has conducted the war is exactly the same manner I would conduct the war. The problem is, I think about it, and I think, would I be the best leader in this wartime situation? And I think not, because I'm too soft. You need someone who's cutthroat. You need someone who's brutal. When it comes to the GCC countries, they can't do anything more than they're already doing. They don't have the military capability. They don't have the military personnel. Who are they going to get to fight for them? Some Pakistanis, like, nobody's going to fight for them.
Right.
They can't do any more than they're already doing. This needs to be a warning to them to say, look, you need to stop, or your country will be obliterated. In terms of, and it needs to be a demand, in terms of the American military base has been removed from the country, I'm in agreement with you. I actually hold this position, which is, as much as many people within the resistance want that, I can't see a scenario where that would ever happen, because these Gulf states are so underneath the shoes of the United States of America and Israel, they would never ever want the U.S. to be removed. They live in fear. They don't have the social and the psychological ability to think that they can fend for themselves. They're always relying on that. Never mind the fact that the U.S. and Mossad are intrinsically linked within the entire apparatus of those countries. Those kings, those rulers, MBS, MBZ, know that if they were to ever get out of line, the United States of America and Israel would assassinate them and replace them immediately. So I agree with you. I don't think the bases will be removed. I'm saying, if I was Iran, I would not be conducting the manner in they do. What they're doing right now is they'll bomb Iran's energy infrastructure, they'll find one or two countries and then they'll hit them, or three countries. They'll hit them plus Israel. That's just not enough, because think about it. They're getting hit more. So in my view, it's very simple.
Really quick, we're coming up here on a break. Join us here for the next 10 to 15 minutes. We love you, Suleiman. Thank you so much for coming on the program. Powerful information on the American Journal. You're going to want to stay with us. Go to realalexjones.com if you want fun, phenomenal vitamins or minerals or supplements.
CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell. And sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this. That's where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultra methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, oh, I've been on this since 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexjonesstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexjonesstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger. Exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexjonesstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
that The Alex Jones Show, which starts 11 a.m. It goes all the way to 3 p.m. We're ringing in your morning here with Suleiman, but I want to let you all know right now, we're going to do another 10 minutes with him. You want to call into the show? Now's your chance. 1-877-789-2539. That's the number to call. Again, that's 1-877-789-2539. Suleiman, we want to let you continue, finish up that last point you were making. Tim's got one more question for you. I've got one more question for you. Again, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on the show.
Really appreciate it. Yeah. So the point was just simply that I don't think they'd ever leave, but the issue is you need to be cutthroat. You need to be brutal. This is your existence on the line. And I think that with Iran, because they're very lovely people, they're very soft people, they just don't want to escalate too much all the time. It's always they're relying on the US and Israel to escalate and then they will respond. So like, for example, they're waiting for the ground invasion and then they will respond. I think that you just simply in this war just can't do that. Look, public sentiment may go against you if you do something like this, but public sentiment isn't going to save your country. Public sentiment didn't save the Palestinians in Gaza. Public sentiment didn't save the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza who were taken out. It didn't basically save the millions of Palestinians who were injured. Even now, they've stolen Palestine from the Palestinians through this Gaza plan, which, again, public sentiment didn't save it. So public sentiment, in my view, let's forget about it. You need to do what you need to do to win this war. And that is and accelerating in the manner I said.
And that's what we're talking about right now. We're not talking about, as Trump calls it, a little excursion or a detour. We're talking about full war. This is the reality of full war. It is brutal. It is death. War is ultimately rotting corpses, and nobody wants that. But someone started this fight, and it wasn't Iran. Tim, your question.
Well, so I'm going to ask the question in just a second. I just want to address the last thing that you were talking about, public sentiment. You know, Israel and America would love for there to be a scenario that plays out where, you know, Iran backed itself into a corner to where it destabilizes its own country. Like I was saying, if, you know, let's say Iran does take action against the salinization plants and oil infrastructure, the Saudis and the Americans and the Israelis are going to go and attack that exact same civilian infrastructure. And then that's perfect opportunity for there to be regime change. And that kind of becomes the self-fulfilling prophecy of what they want. So it's a little bit of a tricky situation. I get it. And I see your perspective. I agree with on certain points. And there's some other things I'm like, maybe there is a better solution.
But we do diversity of thought.
We do diversity of thoughts and we can healthily talk about these things. But one thing I wanted to ask you about was, you know, your information. You are on top of the ball on a lot of these issues. There's tons of sources that
something
are going
breaks
out.
You know.
Yeah, something breaks, you know, like how, and you don't have, I'm not expecting you to like tell the guy who's your sources and you're like, how are you getting your information? Like how are you so on top of things?
Yeah, I'm on, so there's a few ways of disseminating information. Obviously, first of all, being in a large number of Telegram groups. The second thing is I've been doing this for a while, so I do have sources on the ground, whether it's in Lebanon, whether it's in Iran, whether it's in Yemen, whether it's in actually the United States of America. And so we have built this kind of network of people or who are able to give us this information before it happens. So, for example, I knew this war was going to happen before it happened. I knew about the 12-day war the day before. So this kind of, and although I was told about it, I was not too sure at that time, but in the end, that source ended up being right. So it's just, as you know, doing this for a long time, you end up building your sources. And so you're aware of the information. There's a lot of people on the ground who then disseminate that information. Also in the Gulf as well, I have a number of sources. So we're quite blessed in that regard that over time, we've been given a lot of responsibility and trust, and we're able to do that. And in terms of your other point, in terms of regime change, I think the opposite. I think if Iran shows, right now, the entirety of Iran is united with Iran. And the reason is because they see this as an existential threat. They see this as a foreign invaders trying to destroy their own country. And then you saw what happened with those school girls. I think if Iran shows weakness, if Iran doesn't go harder, I think the opposite may occur. That's when there is a chance that there could be a loss of trust, where they think that, look, you've taken us into this war, and yet you're not winning this war. That's when there is a possibility that there could be.
I
don't think it'll happen now.
You touch on something super important, and we got to pay our respects and we got to give them honor. We got to ultimately acknowledge what the U.S. is really, what the empire did We killed 180 schoolgirls and their teachers. Okay, we burned them alive. What does the word Holocaust mean? Okay, everyone wants to talk about the Holocaust all the time. Holocaust means death by fire. That's what we did to those little girls and their teachers. It was a sickening double tap, a terrorist attack, where after the initial strike, after they're gathering in the state, in the safe room, holding each other, hugging each other, the second Tomahawk comes in. What does our president say? What does the imperial leader say? Well, it was them. It was them. Other nations have tomahawks. You got a newsflash.
Casualty of war.
Got Japan, France, Germany, the UK, the only other nations that have tomahawks. We did it clearly. Our government lied about it. And here's the thing. If you're listening to us right now, we're breaking down what's happening. You're like, I disagree. I still trust Trump. I think he's got the, I think he's got goodwill. He doesn't want people to die. That's been proven to be false on the first day of the war. This is evil. We aid and abet in genocide and all these horrible conflicts. It just has to stop now. And I think even if we're on different ideological lines, even if we believe in different belief systems, all these things, we got to realize that we're all humans. We live on this planet together. We're all created by God. We have to honor each other. People aren't disposable units to be burned and thrown away in some sort of conflict for greater war or energy or power resources. Suleiman, I've developed these opinions over the years, really based off of the Ukraine war and watching what's been going on there. And I've been getting phenomenal coverage from people like you, but also people like Dialogue Works, like Nima, also people like Judge Napolitano and Glenn Deason. I got to say, just a little bit of a selfish ask here for Gray Area for American Journal. We really want to talk to Larry Johnson or Lawrence Wilkerson. We love those dudes. I've heard him on your space before. What do you think about minds like that? Because we have people that are 60, 70, 80 years old who have lived through 21st century, 20th century American empire and can speak to it. What do you think about voices like that and why they're valuable?
They're extremely important because what people don't realize is that when someone here is maybe you talking or Larry Johnson talking or Tim talking or, as you said, Lawrence Wilkinson, Daniel Davis, yes, these guys are extremely pro-America. They just know that this is negative even for the United States of America. So let's take Daniel Davis as an example. He's someone who was going to be part of the Trump administration. He was already accepted. He was already selected. And he had the handshake agreement. Just 12 hours before he was going to be anointed or they were going to present it to the public. And obviously Laura Loomer found out about it and made sure the nomination was pulled. But this is someone who was going to be part of the Trump administration and is very pro-America. Whenever I'm on the show, yes, he's always like, our boys, this is not going to be good for us. And he's looking at it very much from a pro-American stance. And despite having that stance, he's saying, look, this war is going to be negative. A lot of American soldiers are going to be lost. We're going to lose this war because of all the things he said. And so I think those voices are extremely important because we look at it from an anti-war perspective. We don't want war. We want peace in the world. Some people are like, actually, we're not anti-war. We're just anti this war because we're going to lose. Because we're not going to achieve any of the goals, and this war isn't for us, but it's for Israel. So
I'm sorry to interrupt. Both moral and practical, and this is the point I always make about people in the current administration. Why wouldn't you resign and run in 2028 and be the hero? Because you look at it, it's just like these things aren't going to work the way you think they're going to work. Even if we are evil empire, we want to conquer everybody and declare victory. You can't win this war, so why would you do it, Tim?
Well, what it is, it's a sunk cost fallacy is what's happening.
Yeah.
They're already in too deep. From the first decision, from the first 100 days, Trump has kind of, you know, gone back on a lot of the things that he promised, what we voted on specifically.
Yes.
And then we've seen decision after decision after decision. And after you get to a certain point, you've already invested so much energy into signaling to the people that you're really trying to appeal to that you just got to go all in. And we've silently sunk into, again, this isn't like me trying to spew Israeli propaganda or all those types of things. They do have a lot of influence on the United States government. And so now we're kind of like, well, we're not just going to cut our relations with Israel. So we might as well go all the way because we thought taking the regime out on that first day was going to do the job.
48 hours. It's going to be over. Don't worry about it.
We don't actually have as much control as we think. So you know what? Gulf states were like, you know what? You started this. You better finish it.
Right.
And that's where we're at. The sunk cost fallacy. I think that's what's going on.
I think this has been a phenomenal interview. We want to have you on again. We're pressed for time. Thank you so much, Suleiman. Where do they find you?
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on. You can find me on X. Obviously, I've got quite a big X channel. That's Sheikh Suleiman. But my biggest focus is YouTube at the moment. With YouTube, we're doing a lot of interviews with military experts, geopolitical experts, experts from a wide range of sources. And then we also provide breaking news on that. And my YouTube is Suleiman Ahmed X, which is Suleiman Ahmed X. So you can see my name there, but with the X at the end. That is my YouTube, so you can check it out there.
Awesome. Awesome. Suleiman, very much so a pleasure to have you on.
Yes.
We really appreciate you. We're going to do this again. We're going to try to have you on the gray area again as well. We're just going to continue this relationship because this is a phenomenal episode. We always have great conversations, so yes. We really appreciate
it. Awesome. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
and I appreciate both of you as well. Thank you so much for standing against this war and standing for humanity. We really do appreciate you.
It's called being pro-humanity, man, and we're all on that team. We're all anti-war. Thank you so much, Suleiman. I want to let you all know right now, got to plug because we're on the network, we're on the air. There's a new rolling sale up to 40% off NAD+, Shilajit caps and gummies, both MK Ultra, that's the powerful nootropic mineral blend. You got to want to get that. And the Atomic Defense, up to 35% off colostrum and life force, up to 30% off iodine tincture, methylene blue tincture, methylene red tincture. Hey, purple cup, pour it up. Why not? Methylene blue and methylene red together. People like that combination. Creatine powder. And you got to listen to me. Alex Jones signature Faraday bag bundle. Inventory is getting low. It's a $500 value. If you're a VIP member, get it for under $200.
That bag is really nice.
And it's chock full of supplements, of gear, of hats, of shirts. That's what you want to get. The Faraday bag bundle. Everything on the site right now is discounted. New rolling sale on most of the items. Thank you so much. We got to get into calls now. Tim, which call you want to take?
Well, let's talk about some specifics. I think people want to talk about the Iran war, the things that we were just talking about. Let's just start with Brandon in Ohio. I think I remember you from the last time. Brandon, you're on the air. What's going on?
Hi. So I just wanted to bring up the fact that every news talk that I hear is talking about how detrimental this whole situation is, and that this has the fulcrum point of pivoting towards nuclear war or total chaos and apocalypse. And that means that these people have a predetermined plan of how they're going to treat us after this is done. And so I think it's about time that Alex Jones, the Joe Rogans, the powerful people of the world step up, put their money where their mouth is, organize. I know Alex Jones doesn't have all this money because he's persecuted and stuff.
Right.
But there are people who do, and they need to get us down. We need to be in Washington, D.C., and we need to be sitting on the sidewalks lining the public fairways with nothing but the people who are anti-Israel.
I totally agree. Here's the thing. The peaceful Martin Luther King Jr. style protest, protesting for our civil rights and into the war and into our rape as citizens, that's 100% what we need. We don't need the pageantry of left and right, and the left wears the pussy hat, and on the right they wear, you know, whatever clothing and regalia, the Patriot Front outfit. We need Americans out there, divorced from a political party, really, because both the parties have sold us out there demanding peace. I know I'm calling for it. I think you're absolutely right. Phenomenal call. Thank you, Brandon. Let's go to Tim in California. Another Tim. Talk about your deep
dive. Real estate. Tim, you're on the line. What's going on?
Hey, great to talk to both of you. And Tim, first time saying hello to you. And yeah, that deep dive this morning was awesome. And I'm in no way an expert about these real estate matters or so forth. But just being an old guy, I can tell you, I think part of the thing that factors into this is the devaluation of our currency starting in 71 when Nixon dropped the gold standard. Yep. And, you know, you could buy a brand new Camaro Z28. I mean, the Z28 for $3,100.
Wow.
Okay. You could buy a brand new nice house for $14,000.
Yep.
And that same house today here in Southern California might be worth $750,000 or more.
Now, question for you, Tim. When you were our age, you know, what was your line of work? Like, what were you doing for a living? What was it really like? I'm curious about these things. Like, were you
able
to cost of living? Did you ever feel strapped at that point?
Well, I don't want to tell you too much, but I will tell you this. For a period of time, I was working at a frozen pizza factory.
Mm-hmm.
And man, you wouldn't think you could make a lot of money doing that. But man, they were absolutely throwing money around hand over fist. They wanted you to learn a new skill as quick as you could. Like you go from the sauce room to the cheese machine to the meat room to get your forklift certification and on and on. And they just keep giving you raises and raises. And hey, I'm just a single guy, but I got my own pad. And you know, I got my own car. I got a motorcycle. If I wanted a boat, I could have got a boat. Because I was in rural Tennessee. So, I mean, I could have
I could have done whatever I wanted. I was buying drinks for the girls and everything. Yeah. You know? So, yeah, but I didn't buy a house. I was a rambling man, so I wasn't going to settle down anytime soon. So,
Tim, you're making me cry. You're making me cry because those do not exist for our generation, do they, Rex?
Yeah, the rent's like $2,000 now. You got taxes out the wazoo. Your money, you can't buy a cheeseburger for less than $15. I mean, you think about the food inflation. It's so crazy. I mean, I remember the dollar menu. We all remember the dollar menu.
I was there for the dollar menu. That was the last great area. Now it's the value menu where you could get it for $1.99, close enough, right?
Sure. Your thoughts in closing, Tim.
Well, but see, the whole concept for like a Trump defending in a certain way is, in a way, he's right. For anyone that happened to get involved or hooked up in a house or houses or so forth, if you did, then over time, the lessening of the value of your money by definition makes it further and further out of reach and more money to buy one.
Yeah.
It's because the money is worth less. Yes. The money is worth less. So you got to spend more money to get the same thing. That's why you can't get a Camaro Z28 for $3,100 today.
Wow. Think about what he just said. $3,100 for a sports car. I mean, we're living in the new age now. Thank you so much for your call, Tim. We hope you call back in. Let's go to Timothy, another Tim in Nebraska, asking about the Zeolite. How are you doing?
Hey, buddy. Do you hear me all right?
Yes.
That's awesome. Because I do not want my phone next to my fucking ear. I know.
Be careful about the swearing, but we're good. We're all right. We're all right. Yeah, I can hear you.
I hear you as if I'm calling my buddy across the street.
Mm-hmm.
My question about zeolite is that I take a lot of supplements.
Right.
Either sea moss, this telogy, and I'll get into all those things if you want, because I've had a positive effect. My question about zeolite is, will it be a waste of money? Because if I take zeolite and all these other supplements, am I just going to pee it out?
It's a good question. So what zeolite is, and there's multiple different kinds of it. We have one of the top white-labeled versions of it. What it is a dechelator, right, or a chelator. It strips the heavy metals out. It has a negative ionic charge. It binds to specific things like lead, for example, and it has these effects. Here's the thing. If you haven't had that heavy metal exposure, if you don't feel like you've been subject to that, then maybe it's not the right choice for you, just in the same way that someone, maybe if they're on SSRIs or other strong drugs, maybe everyone doesn't need to take methylene blue. But the thing is, we produce the products as a resource for you, the viewer, listener, kind of like a deep dive. We give you the starting point, and we want you to do your own research. And then literally all you got to do is ask ChatGPT, ask Google now, literally just look it up, PubMed, check the studies on all these things that we sell, and then make the decision based off of that. There's no secret or esoteric knowledge, but these are real compounds that work. Thank you for your call. We're pressed on time. I got to go to the next guy. Billy in Ohio, how are you doing today?
Hello?
Howdy.
Oh, hi. I'm Billy from Oklahoma, but I thought you were talking about someone else.
Oh, I apologize. I said Ohio here on the machine. I bet.
You're good, dude. You're good. I just wanted to raise a theory and a product plug, too, but I'll raise the theory first. So I was trying to think about, like, the timeline of Trump betraying his base, and I was just thinking, like, man, what happened around the time where he started to go sideways? And is it too far of a stretch to think that, like, you remember he got his updated COVID boosters still like an idiot?
Right.
Do you think that could have anything to do with it? I mean, who knows even what they're giving him?
Yeah.
It could be anything, right?
I think he is drugged up, just like many other presidents before him. I mean, he wouldn't be the first. And if you go back and look at Trump's history, he had some really strong amphetamine prescriptions from, like, a New York Dr. Feelgood. So I don't know. I think they're all kind of like looming specters that are kept alive by pharmacology. He definitely went through a shift. I would say more for me, it's Butler, Pennsylvania. And I look at that.
I mean, it made him a hardened man too. I mean, I look at him. Sometimes he looks like he has a lot of energy. Some other days you can tell that he's exhausted. But for him at his age to be doing what he's doing and maybe going off of 3 or 4 hours of sleep, That, I'm like, caffeine can't do it alone.
That is the key. I don't mean to interrupt you, Tim, because that's the point my dad made. He's like, look, if I stay awake for 2 days, 3 days, things start getting really creepy and really weird and you got to go to bed. Trump, essentially, old people, melatonin levels decline as you age. So he's already getting worse quality sleep, less sleep, going to bed earlier, waking up earlier, the whole nine yards that we know about older people. He's sleepwalking, like you say. Do you see what I'm saying, Tim?
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. Anything else, Brent?
Dude, I love the methylene blue. I know Nitric Boost isn't in the Alex Jones store, but boy, that stuff works really good.
We're coming back with it. It's being reloaded by Bigley right now under new label, new name, new form. You're going to have your Nitric Boost.
All right. Well, man, it's really affecting the cost of living for me because every time I finish a bottle of that stuff, my wife ends up knocked up. And I got like 15 kids and one on the way, man. I can't.
Wow. We love it. That's a good problem to have, fixing the birth rate crisis. Yeah, you're telling me methylene blue is giving you kind of like an Amish family?
Oh, man. Yeah, I can't keep her off of me. I slip some into my wife's food, and dude, I'll tell you what, keep her off of me.
Yeah, nice. Well, hey, you got to try the power plant sometimes, man. I think you'll find that's really incredible. That's a blend that I made that doesn't rely on all those crazy LH medic herbs. What it relies on is a high quality mineral blend proven to boost testosterone and free testosterone combined with stuff that modulates cortisol so you have more fuel source for your hormones. Thank you so much, Billy, for the – oh, go ahead.
No, you're good. I wanted to cover the breaking news that's going on.
Okay, let's cover the breaking news really quick.
Okay,
Thank you, Billy.
Got breaking news. President Trump departs from the White House on his way to the Supreme Court, where he will be the first president in history to sit and listen to the court's oral arguments as it weighs the president's executive order ending birthright citizenship.
Wow, that's breaking news right now. The first time it's ever happened, the president sitting in the Supreme Court to hear oral argument. We're going to be tracking that story as it develops for sure. President Trump attended the arguments but left. I got in, I got out quickly. Nobody gets out quicker than me.
He just wanted to be Soldier Boy and said he's the first.
Yeah.
I'm the first. That's all he wanted to do. Keep going.
Now, what we used to say at swim team is that the first is the worst, the second is the best, the third is the one with the treasure chest, okay? But we're all kind of the ones with the treasure chest here because we get to watch all of it happen. And I love doing it here on the American Journal. I know Tim loves it as well. And here's the thing. We do the deep dive. We do the phenomenal news blitz, and we have the best interviews around. If you want to see more of us, the place to find us is Gray Area Talks on X. We're at like 3.2 right now. It would be amazing to get to 3.5. If y'all are tuning in for the Alex Jones Show, we're here doing the American Journal. If you want to check us out, Thursday and Sunday, the place to be, let me tell you, at 7:30 p.m., you want to be in our live chat, in our live stream. You want to be a part of the Gray Area Show because it's a show like this one. It's for the powerful, discerning consumer.
And if you like the deep dives that I'm doing, I would also appreciate a follow because these are the things that I really care about.
Let's throw Truism
and
Tim up there
and giving you guys information. You can find me on X at Truism Tim. Again, these are the things that we cover specifically so that you guys can be informed. And at the same time, it's just been a pleasure to host the American Journal and just be given this opportunity. And the last thing that you guys should know is on Friday, speaking of guests, we have James Fishback that will be
coming in. Florida gubernatorial, isn't that a fun word to say? Gubernatorial candidate James Fishback, of course, running against Byron Donalds. We're going to be talking to him, talking about AIPAC money, his grassroots campaign, all of it. We're very excited for that. We got high caliber guests for you. This really is a good show. This really is a good show. We've interviewed Fishback before. We've interviewed Suleiman before. We've interviewed Simon Dixon before. And we're going to keep interviewing these people as they track. If he wins, if he loses, we'll go to Florida. We'll have him back on the show. Who knows? It's an adventure and a journey to be here on the Gray Area. Yeah. How do you feel?
I feel great. You know, you want to tune in at 10 a.m. on Friday. We're going to be here. I won't be here tomorrow. Rex is going to be holding down the fort doing a solo. But again, I love you guys. I appreciate the opportunity. We're going to continue to do this as long as this plays out. So
I want you to pick up the sword of life today, and I want you to go out on a journey, on a hero's journey of your own. I want you to go out there, challenge and seize victory, demand excellence from your political officials, from yourself, everything you can do in life. Try to help another person and live up to the standard of Jesus Christ, who we all worship and adore. Thank you so much for being here on the American Journal. Rex Jones, Tim Tompkins, catch us live tomorrow. We'll be right back.
In a world where globalists, depopulationists, principalities, and powers of the air have been adding, spraying, and inundating humans with heavy metals, chemicals, and toxins, TheAlexJonesStore.com would like to introduce a new way to remove them from your body from the inside out. Introducing Zeolite. Zeolites are a group of crystal-like porous minerals that are found where molten stone meets water. From the Greek zeo, to boil, and lithos, or light, meaning stone, this unique network of tiny little holes and channels found in zeolite absorb and remove harmful substances like heavy metals, chemicals, and other toxins. So don't delay. Start the process of removing unwanted toxins from your body and put some skin in the game of the info war today by going to TheAlexJonesStore.com and picking up a bottle of Zeolite.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.